For our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Aurora Students Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work towards the decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. Thank you. So for speaker's business, I'll keep it quick. The voting machine system is down. So that means that when we vote, you'll have to raise your placards. When we vote and do nominations, we'll have to find a way to do a secret ballot. Similarly, when you want to speak, we have to make a speaker's list by hand. So just raise your placard, I will give you a nod, and that means you're on the speaker's list. And then when we vote, raise your placard. I forgot to ask, is there a smudging ceremony today? Does anybody know? No, okay, that's all good. Our next meeting of Students' Council will take place on the February 11th at 6 p.m. Now, the order papers say here, but on the calendar it says at Campus St. Jean, so I'm sure someone will have more information for you before then. Similarly, as I mentioned, when you talk, please hit your button on your thing so that the microphone's on. Otherwise, if you're not talking, make sure it's off, please. So with that, we'll do attendance. Okay, President Batnagar.
Present.
VP Agarwal.
Present.
VP Brown. VP Stat.
Present.
VP Larson.
Present.
Governor Lee.
Present.
Councilor McKenzie.
Present.
Councilor Conrad.
Hello.
Councilor Vargas Alba.
Yes.
Councilor Beasley.
Here.
Councilor Chan. Councilor Dixon.
Yeah.
Councilor Draper.
Hi, friends.
Councilor Isaac. Councilor Esmail.
Yeah.
Councilor Marinakis.
Present.
Councilor Kidd.
Yeah.
Councilor C.
Here.
Councilor Bose.
Here.
Councilor Wasicki. Councilor Harris.
Here.
Councilor Sunday. Councilor Nguyen. Councilor Blondin.
Here.
Councilor Hadouche. Councilor Medeta.
Yep.
Councilor Dillon.
Here.
Councilor Matera. Councilor Zaya.
Here.
Perfect, thank you, and no one can watch you. Okay, we're gonna move on to our presentation now. At VP Larson.
Yes, sorry, I'd like motion to suspend standing orders if possible to allow for more presentations.
That's an order. There must have been some sort of mix-up or something because we have a lot of presentations today, so we need to suspend standing orders to have them all. So, I need a second here for that. Thank you, Councillor Bose. Since this is suspending standing orders, it's non-debatable and non-amendable, and please raise your placards. So, all in favor of suspending standing orders for more presentations. All right, thank you, that carries. Standing orders have been suspended so we can have more presentations. With that, we will go on to the first one, which is VP Staff.
I'd like the motion to move forward to have student care present tonight.
That is in order. I will slot them in after some of the more, where the presenters are more pressed for time. So we'll start with, Lee moves to allow the Board of Governors presentation. Kate Chisholm, QC, is a senior vice president and the chief of legal at Sustainability and Capital Power. She is the chair of the University of Alberta Board of Governors. She will be at Students' Council to discuss and take questions on the challenges and opportunities facing the university this year and the longer-term future of the institution. Is there a seconder for this presentation? VP Larson, thank you. Is there any opposition to this presentation? If there's none, I'll pass on the floor, and you'll have 15 minutes to start with.
Can I stand over here?
Totally up to you. I can turn on those controls.
So, good evening. I want to thank you all for the kind invitation to come here. And before I begin, I would just like to introduce you to my colleagues on the Board of Governors. We have Lynn Parrish here. She's the Vice Chair of the Board of Governors. Mary Pat Berry, who represents the alumni. And Matthew Barnett, who represents NASA. We also have, of course, Acacia and Rowan both sit on the board governors. And so I want you to know also that Acacia and Rowan on the board of governors and Acacia and Jared Larson on the presidential search committee are all doing an absolutely excellent job of representing you. They add value and they provide us with important views within the student voice, which is very valuable to us, especially this year because, well, let me tell you about me. I'm an alum, and my daughter graduated from law last year. She also got her BSc and her MSc from the University of Alberta. So we're like golden bears for sure. I have a business background, which is, I think, why the UCP appointed me so suddenly in August. Not because I'm a bagman for the UCP party, but because they may have known, although they didn't tell me when they appointed me, that there are a number of sort of important business considerations that will have to be made at the U of A this year. And of course, what I'm talking about is the budget. Let's start at the top. The government of Alberta is facing a pretty serious problem because the bond rating agency, DBRS, downgraded their bond rating. I think that they're under some pressure and may get a further bond rating if they don't reduce the province of Alberta's expenditures. And unfortunately, that has sort of spread out to every sector in Alberta. I know that because I also sit on the Alberta Securities Commission, and I am a senior executive at an energy company, and there isn't any sector. You guys have read about health, you've read about education. It's sort of affecting everybody in Alberta at the moment. And so when you come to the University of Alberta, I think it's very likely that the size of the provincial grant is going to diminish over time. And the university is going to have to figure out how to raise revenue from alternate sources to replace that revenue. And that's going to take a whole bunch of different types of considerations, and business considerations is one of those types. We don't have any specific marching orders yet, but times are tough, obviously. And so the University of Alberta Board of Governors is trying as hard as it can to make sure that at the end of the day, we can not only keep the U of A boat upright, but also do it in a way that balances the best interests of students, the best long-term interests of the university, and against sort of what we have to do. And for that reason, we are very grateful to have the student voice on the Board of Governors. The Board of Governors has a number of committees, one of which is the Student Experience Committee, and it works very, very hard to make sure that we understand the impact of certain decisions, external conditions, and policies on students. It has, I think, Acacia and Rowan on it. Just Acacia. And Fahed, who is the grad students union representative. And we hear from administration, and we hear about a lot of student concerns, including student mental health, student supports. And so you may have heard from all of the many representatives of student union that attended the Board of Governors Senate GFC Summit on Friday that we're playing sort of a very, very serious game. One of the things that we were talking about performance-based funding for the university, and one of the proposals that has come out is that we minimize our administration costs. And so one of the things we spoke about, for example, was the fact that administration costs can contain student services. And you don't want to reduce funding to student services, because if you do, you can actually reduce student completion rates as well as negatively impacting the student experience on campus. And at the end of the day, there isn't anybody anywhere, whether it's the Senate, the Board of Governors, or administration, that wants you guys not to have as positive an experience on campus as possible. And so we're doing our best to balance all of those things. But it's going to be a very long, complex process. With that, I'm happy to take questions on anything.
Would you like me to moderate, or would you like this?
You go ahead.
Okay, so you can just put up your thing, and I'll write your name down, so Councilor Dixon can go for it.
Thank you for the presentation. I was just kind of broadly speaking, I was wondering if the board is currently like looking to, and like how they are looking at addressing the decay of student spaces and classrooms on campus, particularly the ways that herd maintenance continues to like impact us on a day-to-day basis.
Well, there's good news and bad news on that front, frankly. We had some infrastructure money that we had expected to come from the province this year canceled. And so that's going to defer our deferred maintenance repairs a little bit. But on the other hand, we had an order in council just late last week that approved our land trust. And what the land trust does is, you probably know this, but the University of Alberta is one of the largest landowners in the province. We own lots and lots and lots of land and buildings. But because of constraints on us, we haven't really been able to make the best possible use of all of that land. And what the land trust will do is it will enable us to use land that we're not using for strictly university purposes to raise money. So this will be one of the alternate revenue sources that we're trying to develop. And for example, UBC was, I think, the first university in Canada to get a land trust, and their land trust now raises for them $700 million a year. The U of C had their land trust approved about 5 years ago, and they're getting about $100 million from it, which is wonderful. We would like to replicate that, but it will take a while, because what you have to do is decide how you're going to go about it, you know, what land you're going to, let's say you rent it out, or you allow somebody else to develop it, or whatever. Those plans are going to take a while. So the land trust is going to be very useful to us, but it will take a while to get up and running. So the deferred maintenance is a work in progress, frankly. Come on, you guys.
Yep. Thank you for your presentation. I just want to say I'm in large disagreement on the idea that the main thing that this government is seeking out to do is to reduce its debt. I think that the best way to ensure that university is accessible is to keep it affordable. Don't think it's affordable now, and I am wary about thinking that it's going to be affordable after the spring budget, increasing up to 7%, which, I mean, I would like to see what your predictions are on how much that'll increase after the budget. But I'm wondering, how is the board fighting to ensure stronger funding on all fronts to the university?
So duly noted on tuition, thank you. What is the board doing? Well, I mean, we are in constant contact with the government. What are we doing to fight for what, sorry?
For stronger funding on all fronts.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you guys know, perhaps as well as I do, we have an advancement office that is out talking to donors and foundations every single day. There's a team there, and that's all they ever do. So they're fighting for non-government dollars. The alumni talks to the alumni about donations, and they do that regularly, I can tell you from experience. And we're talking to the government about provincial grants. We talk to the federal government about federal money all of the time.
And some of the federal money, for example, that we've had in the past has been matching dollars to the provincial grant. So if the provincial grant shrinks, the federal money would shrink too. And so we're talking to them about divorcing those two things. We're talking to all sorts of people about alternative revenue sources. In fact, we've created an ad hoc committee to consider just that. We're doing, I think, everything we can.
Sorry, Councilor Dixon.
Okay. So I think for answer to the last question, my next question is not along the same lines. So as you probably know, recently University of British Columbia divested from oil. There's clearly demand from many student groups across Canada. I mean, it's our future, and it's kind of very scary for a lot of students, and there's a growing demand for it here at U of A, as well as at other universities across Canada, as a precedent is being set. So my question is, what work, if any, is the Board of Governors doing into looking towards a way that we can sustainably divest from oil?
The Board of Governors is not looking at that.
Can I ask why not?
Well, for a number of reasons. First of all, I think that there are some research chairs at the University of Alberta, for example, who are working at taking greenhouse gas emissions out of oil production. And so the university is working very, very hard on climate change. But I think there are a lot of scientists and engineers that would disagree with the proposition that the best way to attack climate change is by getting off oil. I'm happy to go on. Maybe we can talk about that offline. I could tell you about that for hours and hours and hours, but that's certainly my personal opinion as well.
Thank you, Councillor Bader.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I think that would be interesting to hear, because that would be exciting if that's possible. We rely very heavily on that natural resource. Just going back to your point about the federal government, has there been, because this budget's been over for a few months, but I understand it's only slowly, what kind of solutions or ideas has the federal government given to you, or have you given to them, besides this separating, matching provincial and federal donations?
Well, there are a number of things that we're talking to the federal government about. I'm not sure I can tell you about the details of them, because I think I would be putting the federal government right on the spot, right? You just have to trust that everybody on the Board of Governors and everybody in the advancement office and everybody on the alumni really want the University of Alberta to be everything that you want the University of Alberta to be, really, honestly.
Point of information, Mr. Speaker?
Yeah.
Can I just add something to that question that's relevant?
Unfortunately, that's not a point of information first.
Okay, I'm just going to say the piece anyway. Sorry. I will say that U of A is part of Universities Canada, the federal group that represents universities to the federal government, so those asks are identically aligned with the U of A's asks and have yet to be changed.
Thank you. Councilor Draper.
Hello. I had the pleasure of sitting at the same table as you during the Joint Senate on Friday, and at our table there was a nice robust discussion about how open educational resources could be the future for this organization, specifically in the context of a possible performance-based money initiative, as it would help reduce costs to the university as well as increase student satisfaction. At that time, I recall you had expressed some support in the idea of open educational resources as a general shift for the university. Would you, I guess, maintain that position and champion open educational resources as a shift in our institution?
I have to apologize to you because, quite candidly, I don't know what is meant by open educational resources.
So I guess currently we have a lot of textbooks that cost way more than they should. Open educational resources are resources that are typically made with open access so that professors can access that tailored to their specific courses, and they typically are not hidden behind paywalls.
Well, so I can tell you for certain that the Board of Governors doesn't have a position on this. I think that anything that doesn't contravene law and makes doesn't contravene policy and makes education, high quality education, less expensive is probably a good idea, but I don't really understand all the ins and outs of that question. I apologize.
All right, we have run out of our first 15 minutes. There are a lot of people on speaking list. We need two-thirds of the majority to continue. Two-thirds of you raise your black and be joined. That looks like two-thirds, thank you. So we'll continue for 10 more minutes. We'll go on to Councilor Beasley.
Sorry. Thank you so much for coming here and talking to us. I was hoping that I could just ask you a little bit on like the business-centric framing like of the Board of Governors' work. I think it's like incredibly valuable to have those perspectives and those ideas, but I know that for myself and for other students, there can be like a pervasive fear that like in this business-centric framing that we might lose out on like scholarships or bursaries and other priorities. And I was just wondering if you could expand on like where you think the limitations of like a business-centric framing lie and how the board still puts students first.
When I talk about the importance of some people with a business perspective on the Board of Governors, it's only because when we look at alternative revenue sources, I'm talking about things that maybe the university hasn't done in the past. So for example, the University of British Columbia floated a bond in respect of some of its deferred maintenance. The University of Alberta has never done that, and as far as I know, there is nobody at the University of Alberta that really knows how to do that. And so it has, from my perspective, the business acumen would never apply to change anything about accessibility to students or affordability to students. It would actually be to help and only in respect of the alternative revenue sources.
Thank you so much.
Are you a business student?
No, but economics.
Well, same diff, right? Okay.
Councilor Kidd.
Hello, over here. thank you for your presentation. So you mentioned how the Learning, Research, and Student Experience Committee focuses on how students feel on campus and about their education. Do you think it's enough to have two students on the committee to represent 40,000 students at the U of A?
I think probably, how many would you like?
Half, at least.
Half of the students?
No, half of the committee be represented by students.
Well, I think from a governance perspective, that's unrealistic. I think that we really need to have a very strong student voice there. I think you guys have, at least this year, this is my first year, I think you've elected the right student voices. The Post-Secondary Learning Act sets out how many students can be on the Board of Governors, and only members of the Board of Governors can be on the committee unless there's a special dispensation. So, and I think what I think the purpose of that committee is really not so that students can make decisions about the student experience, but rather so that the students can allow the Board of Governors to know what the student experience is, and so that student experience is taken into account when we make other decisions. Sort of a different mandate.
Can I reply?
Yeah.
Okay, so then how does the General Faculties Committee, which is the Council on Student Affairs, have half students? It seems like there's a disconnect between the General Faculties Committee that is representing students and the Board of Governors, which, like, Board of Governors Representative Lee has been trying to get live stream, and we couldn't, like, that's taken so long. Like, there seems to be, like, this board is surrounded in, like, mystery, and it's hard for students to access. And saying that, like, well, we have two students who represent us, like, President Babnagar is excellent, but she cannot, and the same with the Graduate Students Association president, she cannot represent every student in their lived experience. And I think the way you answered that actually just makes people feel like they're not allowed, or they're not present, or they're not viewed respectfully by the Board of Governors.
So I'm very sorry, I didn't mean to signal any disrespect whatsoever. We respect President Akanksha and all of the students that we deal with very, very much. And I'm happy for you guys to send questions. The requirements that you're talking about are actually set out in the Post-Secondary Learning Act. This is not a decision by the Board of Governors. This is a decision by the government of Alberta that we can't impact. the problem about accessing the Board of Governors is really more of a practical reality, and that is that I have a very, very, very busy day job. I have a job that requires from me 55 to 60 hours a week. And so over and above that, I volunteer on the Board of Governors. And the Board of Governors has how many, eight committees? Nine committees now? And so I actually have sort of two full-time jobs. And there is nothing more important to me than the success of students at the University of Alberta. Unfortunately, there are just so many hours in the day. And so that's what the constraint is. It's not anything else.
Thank you. Councillor Lee.
Hi. Thanks for your presentation. Because of these cuts to the budget from the government, I guess how will the university ensure and maintain that students are either getting, you know, a higher quality of education for the, you know, or better quality education at the $1,000 they're losing, or that students are just paying less? Maybe there's a mechanism in which the university could do that so students could pay less in response to the government cuts.
So let's be clear about the government cuts. Administration has had their compensation frozen for several years, and yet the cost of living has gone up. And so when you keep compensation absolutely flat, but the cost of living goes up, what you are actually doing is reducing people's compensation effectively. And so everybody, not just administration, but I'm sure the professors, I'm sure everybody on campus wants to be paid more. Students want to be paid less. And we want to provide the very best education possible and ensure that the very good research that the U of A is doing is being able to be sustained. And so we're going to try and balance all of those things. I don't know how we're going to deal with it. But the interest of students is going to be a very, very important consideration when we make our decisions.
And then are we supposed to do that at, like, Board of Governors or, like, here? Or, like, if I feel like maybe most of what we say here won't be necessarily taken into action. So I guess it kind of goes back to Katie's question, but I didn't think of that before, so thank you.
Councilor Wanda?
Hi. So many councils have been wondering, and I've been curious myself, as to the status of the Indigenous representative on the Board of Governors. Could we get a status update if you've done any work on it?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I'll certainly get back to you.
Great.
Thank you. Councilor Bowles?
Hello. Yeah, of course. So thank you for your presentation. So the main group who will be affected due to the increase of tuition fees are the international students. So I was wondering, is the university or the board doing anything to help the international students to cope up with these increases? Thank you.
Again, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. So I don't know that international students are going to be more affected than anybody else. I don't know. I just don't know the answer to that question yet. But what I can tell you is that the Board of Governors never discusses increasing tuition without also increasing student aid. We feel that they go hand in glove. But no decisions have been made yet. We're still listening when still doing due diligence in respect of the consequences of a lot of alternative choices we have to make.
Thank you, VP
Sass.
Thank you. I can turn
on
myself, but
all right. Thanks for coming up, Kate. My main concern I wanted to bring up with you is regarding what the university's response to the performance-based funding metrics is going to be. As I'm sure you are aware, there's a number of problems with the framework. Particularly, this model has no way to actually ensure funding season within the post-secondary system. And what I mean by that is when institutions do lose money, that money's just gone, and it's not returned in any capacity. And then also, secondly, to that point, the all-stick, no-carrot approach does mean that institutions will be incentivized to play it safe and not take chances by innovating service delivery and those types of things out of fear of losing funding. So my question is, what steps has the university taken regarding its operations to be able to make those operations more efficient and more effective without compromising service delivery? And I'd also be curious to know what steps the university has made initially on this, but with some assurance the university will look to positively innovate its services and businesses despite the incentives to keep it safe in the wake of the budget 2019 and budget 2020 changes to funding.
So you've asked about four different questions in there,
yeah.
So let me see if I get them all right. I frankly agree with you that this is an all stick and no carrot approach. And I intuitively, I suspect you're right, although I don't know for sure, that money that is lost because of failure to meet performance-based funding metrics will just go back into general revenue. Makes sense to me? I don't know that for sure. Insofar as the performance-based funding quelling innovation, I think the university will be focused on meeting the performance-based funding metrics, but I'm not sure that I agree with your proposition that that will quell innovation. I think that what will happen is that there may be innovation that's required to meet the metrics, first of all, but along with that, and we don't even know what the metrics are, so I mean this is all sort of pie in the sky shadow boxing at this stage, but I don't think the government's purpose in imposing the performance-based funding is to quell innovation. I think they want us to be innovative. And I think that everyone at the university is absolutely focused on maintaining the University of Alberta's reputation and its competitive position vis-a-vis its peers. And so I think that actually you might find increased innovation in some cases instead of decreased innovation.
We're just actually out of time, but we can extend again if you're comfortable with that. Whole time. Is that okay?
I'm okay, but
we need a motion this time. So, Councilor Kidd, for how long? Sorry.
10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Okay, motion to extend by 20 minutes. Is there a seconder? Councillor Dixon, thank you. Okay, so again, this is a suspending standing order, so we need 2/3. All in favor of extending for 20 minutes? I wish I could see you all, but that looks like 2/3. So that carries, thank you. GP Stad, you can continue.
Thank you. It's good to hear the university is still going to be looking for opportunities to innovate and not be dissuaded to do so by the changes to the budget. To that end, I'd be curious if you could give any examples on opportunities that you're currently looking at for operational efficiency as it currently stands.
I'm sorry, you did ask that before. I think you asked what we had, what the university has done so far in anticipation of these things.
And what I'd be looking to do.
And President, thank you very much. President Turpin put out a written message which lists in great detail everything that has been done to date. We have met so far the government's requirements. And so there have been some positions eliminated at the university. There have been some capital projects canceled at the university. We're going to run a deficit. Whereas before the cuts, we were going to have sort of a balanced budget, but we've done our part so far. We're just waiting to find out what happens next, what they require from us further.
Thank you, Councilor Dixon.
Okay. Hello again. So I think I have to be like quite frank with this next question. I think it encompasses like the overarching kind of theme throughout these questions, and that's that a lot of students feel completely neglected and ignored by this board of governors, no matter if we are protesting or shouting or writing letters or have our two representatives asking for something. Oftentimes, that's not what actually gets represented. And I've talked to so many students and so many counselors about this, and I know that this is like a common, if not the only, feeling about the board of governors. And for me personally, it's kind of disappointing because when I look at all of you, I look at people who are old enough to be my parents and I want to be caring for me, but a lot of the time these actions don't reflect that at all. So my question is, I've been told a lot by the Board of Government, I think we all have, that you guys care about our input, and I wish that that was enough to assure me that the right thing's going to be done. But my question, to be completely frank, is why, when we keep asking for things, if you truly care about our input and want to help us, do we continuously have policy that is passed that really harms us, like meal plans or raising like international student tuition or all of these different issues? Like, I think that like that truly needs to be addressed.
Well, I'm sorry that you feel neglected, I can assure you that every member of the Board of Governors would be very disappointed to hear what you just said, because we do our best to protect students and to protect the learning experience at the University of Alberta. However, I think that probably there is context that the Board of Governors has to consider which is not being considered by the students at the moment, and that is, for example, budget. And there are a lot of competing things that we have to balance. And students are very, very important to us, but there are other competing interests as well.
Thank you, Councillor Pete.
Thank you for your presentation. So I just wanted to ask, so does the university, when they enroll more students, for students' tuition, do they get 100% of the students' tuition? And then from the budget, that's from the government. I just wanted to ask, is that, I just wanted to ask for clarification from that. And then I sit on APC in GFC, and Melinda showed the undergrad enrollment report, and it looks like they have, the enrollment has increased since it's been charted, it hasn't really gone down. So is enrollment continuing to increase? And if services, such as if student services are not going to be, if there isn't going to be any more funds towards student services, would it be wise to continue enrolling more students? Because that wouldn't that just be setting students up for, in a sense, you know, like depression and failure or whatnot, you know, like that would add more pressure to students. So would a way to combat that be not increasing enrollment to students? So I just had two questions for that.
Actually, that's three.
Three.
So when students pay tuition to the university, no portion of that tuition goes to government.
Okay.
That was your first question. Second question was, is enrollment increasing? And I think it has been, but I also think it may continue to increase. I don't know. This is another decision that the Board of Governors hasn't yet made. So I'm speaking as Kate, not the Board of Governors. But I think it's to your benefit if enrollment increases a little bit, because if we have amount of money that we have to raise from tuition, we can do it by keeping the number of students the same and just increasing what everybody pays, or we can keep the amount of tuition the same. This is oversimplistic, this is just an example, but we can get more students. And so I'm not sure that, again, we're gonna balance all of the interests, but those are two sort of alternative ways to go about that, right? And so I don't think that you should conclude necessarily that increasing some enrollments would be a bad thing for students. The third question that you asked was, student services. As I said in the beginning, I think that we shouldn't be when they're asking us to reduce administrative costs. I think we should clarify, and we are fighting for this, that student services should be included in that, because we understand the importance of student services to student mental health, to student completion, and basically to student quality of life on campus. Does that answer your question?
So you on a very long list, so thank you for your patience. Councillor Kennedy.
So I wanted to thank you and your colleagues for coming out to us to hear our concerns. I did just want to touch on student services that
I think the U of A has been phenomenal. As most of my colleagues know, I was in a fire, and the U of A has been helping me for the past month from a problem, and that is like such a relief for students. So definitely, I'm in support of that, and I would urge you to keep that in mind. I have, I guess, two questions for you. The first one is touching on your response to VP Stack's question on the U of A running a deficit. So correct me if I'm wrong, but was it the operating budget they took, or they took money from reserves for the this year for running the U of A? Correct. Will the U of A, I guess, consider doing that again if more surprises come up in terms of funding, or there's difficulty securing other sources of funding, which you're looking into now? And then the other one is that I sit on my academic like an advisory committee for my faculty. I'm in the faculty of ALES, and one of the things that was discussed with us was that for them to receive funding on the faculty, we have to basically keep more students to taking ALES courses and ALES courses only. And I was wondering if increasing enrollment is going to occur, how smaller faculties that are kind of already hitting their breaking point is going to manage with that. Sorry.
I'm sorry that you were in a fire, and I'm glad to hear that and see that you're doing just fine. And so the first question was,
it was about would the U of A sustain its deficit?
Yeah, we don't yet know exactly the size of the cuts that are coming, and so. If, for example, we have a number of capital projects that are ongoing, and we would be breaching contracts if we just terminated them. Dent Farm is a good example. There are others. And so the answer to that question is we're going to have to wait and see what they come at us with. If we can do it otherwise, I think probably it would be in everybody's best interest that we not run a deficit, but it's a tool in the toolbox that we will consider if necessary. Now, your next question was?
It was about basically increasing enrollment with our current funding model for faculties, and especially specific to smaller faculties. I was wondering, I guess, how the supports for that plays out to individual faculties. So, for example, ALES is a very small faculty, but science is very large. And so the way that the funding for ALES works right now is that we need to get funding to keep ALES kids in ALES courses. If that makes sense. So if I go to take an arts class, the funding doesn't go back to ALES. And so I was wondering if the board has any plans in terms of, I guess, helping those smaller faculties adjust with that funding model and giving them the resources to be able to combat that.
I can't tell you that we have plans yet because I haven't heard this issue before.
Okay.
But I'm sure that administration is looking at it, and they will come to us if there's a problem. Some of the smaller faculties are very important, and I know that because we talk about them.
Perfect. Thank you.
You guys are like way ahead. You assume that we know more than we do, but we don't yet.
VP Larson, sorry, so thank you, Kate, for the presentation. Over the past few years, residence prices have been increasing by 5% consistently year over year, with the expectation that over the next 2 years, we're going to be seeing 5% increases again, as per the sort of understanding at the Residence Advisory Committee last year. But over that sort of time, new residences have opened where students are paying more than $1,000 a month to live in six-bedroom shared apartments or double-occupancy dorm rooms with shared washrooms. And at the same time, the students' perceived value of living in residence has been dwindling, down to 16% ratings last year. As Ancillary Services will be looking at the next BFPC meeting to raise rent by another 5% across all residences, 10% for five residences in East Campus, and 106% for the newly renovated McKenzie Tower, how can we ensure that the board prioritizes the student experience in deciding whether these prices are fair? And how can the board ensure that students are truly receiving the value-added experience of living in residence?
I think the philosophy at the university is that those services have to pay for themselves. And so if, for example, the cost of providing those services went up, I don't know what's driving the 5%. I guess I'll find out at the next BNPC meeting. But if the cost of providing those services is going up and the prices charged for those services doesn't go up commensurately, then we would have to subsidize that from some other place of funding, such as tuition or something else. And so I think that it's, from my perspective, and this is not the Board of Governors speaking, this is Kate speaking, but from my perspective, a user paid system is probably the fairest. I think that it would be unfair to expect university community students who don't live in residence to subsidize residence for those who do. But I'm sure that we will consider carefully whether or not to raise those prices. And if we do, it will be because the cost has gone up, the cost of providing them has gone up, and we have no other source for of funding to meet the increase.
Thank you, Councillor Vargas-Alba.
All right, so this is a 3-in-1, but you might not have to answer all of them. So circling back to your earlier response on divestment, I want to note that points for divestment aren't just rooted in carbon intensive like intensification, they're also rooted in their respective indigenous rights. So at this very moment, the Coastal GasLink and the RCMP are attempting to invade sovereign Wet'suwet'en territory in British Columbia to build infrastructure that Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs have not consented to. If the Board of Governors doesn't support divestment because it trusts decarbonization forces and research at the university, does their stance change when considering indigenous peoples? If the answer to that is no, can the Board of Governors still claim to be invested in the process of reconciliation? And if the answer to that is yes, then why haven't we heard more opposition to the removal of indigenous representatives from the board?
Wow. So let me be clear that the Board of Governors hasn't taken a position on divestment. Nobody has suggested the Board of Governors should. The Board of Governors' position has not changed in the least bit in respect of indigenous students or indigeneity. I'm not sure. What I was telling you was that in my personal view, we are at least as likely to be able to take greenhouse gas emissions out of the air as we are to be able to create a battery that will last for more than 4 hours. And so if you think about this, in March of 2019, or February of 2019, which was the coldest February in 50 years in Alberta, wind and solar were available in less than 5% of hours. So to go on 100% renewables would have meant that everybody in Alberta froze to death. We believe that we are just as likely to be able to take carbon out of the air through direct air capture as create a battery that will light the University of Alberta for a month in February when it's minus 30. And for that reason, I believe we need to work on an all of the above solution. I believe that it would be a mistake. I'm an ardent believer in climate change, So please don't suggest that you care more about the environment than I do, because it's just baldly false. I believe that we need to have all of our scientists and all of our engineers working as hard as they can on every possible solution to climate change, rather than knocking some of them out before we know which ones will work faster and better. That's all I was saying. It has nothing to do with indigeneity. As you know, we have an EDI policy at the U of A, and the Board of Governors is just as proud of it as you guys are.
Councilor Ricola.
Yes, we keep in mind. All right, we're running out of time on this yellow list, though.
Yeah. So can I tease out a little bit more this idea of like why you believe that it is so possible to get successful research on decarbonization of the oil and gas industry, but I don't really get the same like attitude around getting successful research on renewable resources at the University of Alberta?
Oh, there is. There's lots of successful research at the University of Alberta on both topics. The University of Alberta is doing really good work in supporting climate change. Really, really good work.
Right. Thank you. We'll go to Councillor Draper.
Thank you very much. Earlier you mentioned that increases tuition and increases student aid go hand in glove. But from my perspective, it seems that a lot of the time the glove is three times too small and the hand's growing a lot faster than the glove should be. Is there gonna be a way to increase student aid to meet the levels that it's not meeting right now before tuition increases, and also to ensure that when tuition goes up and a new bracket of people are unable to pay for the raised tuition, that the criteria for needs-based funding changes with it so that people who can't afford it at all can have that chance? So I guess two-pronged, will it be increasing more so than just the same amount as tuition and making it so that it's accessible and easier to access, and then also will the criteria be changed alongside with tuition increases?
You know, I don't want to frustrate you guys, but you're asking me questions that I don't know the answer to yet, and I don't speak for the entire Board of Governors. I chair it, but these are things that, in some cases, presentations haven't even been made to the Board of Governors yet. And so you're asking me to sort of predict what's going to happen, and I really can't sort of see into the future. I can tell you that all of the affordability and accessibility things will be presented when those decisions are presented to the Board of Governors, and the Board of Governors will consider them very, very carefully. But I can't tell you what will happen because I don't know what proposals will be made to the Board of Governors.
Thank you. Councilor Conrad.
Just going back to that, where students feel neglected, that is definitely a communication piece, right? That may be misunderstanding on our part, that may also be miscommunication on your part, I don't know. Do you think there are ways, as a full board, like I just looked on your website and there are lists of meetings and agendas, and that's good, and absolutely students should take time to read that and inform themselves. Yes, absolutely, looking at society and all of those things, but do you think there are ways that the Board of Governors can communicate to students that students are heard, that that you do care about students, like where are there, is there advertisement in that sense that would make us believe that you are very sincerely concerned? Because you said that here and that's good, and we can share that with our constituents, but are there ways that they are receiving that directly from the board?
Hopefully, in my imagination, what is going on is that within the bounds of confidentiality, Akanksha and Rowan are coming back from Board of Governors meetings and telling you about sort of what's going on and that's of interest to you and what positions were taken and sort of their views. I think one of the purposes of the student reps on the Board of Governors is actually to communicate to you what, I mean, it's twofold, right? Your student reps bring the student voice to the Board of Governors, but they should also be bringing the Board of Governors to you. And so if that's not working, then I should be sitting down with Rowan and Akanksha, and we should be working out a better system.
Thank you. We're out of time. Do you need to leave? Or are you just stay longer?
Let's take one more question if we may.
Sure. Next one's Councilor Kidd.
All right.
So, I first want to respond. You mentioned that, you know, you're a volunteer on the Board of Governors and you work a full-time job. I think it's important to note that this room is full of students who attend 5 or 4 classes a week. They also work part-time jobs. I work 20 hours a week as well as volunteer on numerous committees. All of us come here, we're also on committees. So like we understand that it's hard work, but I don't think that's allowed to be used as an excuse, because if we don't use it, I don't think the Board of Governors gets to, especially considered we are probably paid way less at our jobs. The real question I have though is, so last year we were told that the Board of Governance Committee approved a set of principles that allows for subject matter experts to come to committees. So when you were saying that like the Post-Secondary Learning Act decides who sits on the Board of Governors, but with the committees there's more flexibility. So are you actively recruiting students to come to these committees as subject matter experts, considering that students would be subject matter experts on student life? Thank you.
We have students on the committees on which our governance allow students to sit. And so
is it just
we have student
President
experts.
Batnagar?
I beg your pardon?
Is it just President Batnagar or is there other students?
Well,
have you actually, like, I'm wondering if you've tried to recruit students outside of student governance. Like, have you tried to get just someone who attends their classes and who doesn't really know a lot maybe about the governance of the university but has lots of opinions about their during their time here?
The Act doesn't allow us to do that.
I'm asking for committees, not for the board.
No, we have students on the committees where students can be on the committee.
But have they come in as subject matter experts, is what I'm asking.
Of course they have.
Okay.
And you elect them as such.
No, that's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you, have you brought in students outside of the elected positions to come and talk about their experiences on campus as subject matter experts?
You know, I don't know, but I suspect not.
So maybe that would be a way to answer Councillor Conrad's question about getting more student engagement, is reaching out to students beyond the people sitting in this room, to the people who don't maybe spend a lot of time on campus, but they have opinions about how much they're paying in tuition and how much they have to pay in residence, and have them be able to come and share personal stories and share personal stories about their friends and about their lives on campus that two represented officials can't. So that would be my suggestion for you.
Thank you.
All right, so we are out of time for our board chair. Well, thank you for coming in. So move on. I did not mention this because I forgot to, but everyone says that their motions are time sensitive, so they're all going over to the main agenda. Congratulations. So we're going to, Larson moves to allow the campus clean air working group consultation presentation. The abstract is long, so I'm probably not going to read it, but motion by President Larson for this presentation is our second. Councilor Conrad, thank you. Is there any opposition to this presentation? If there is none, then I'll invite our speaker to come, and you can stand up or sit there, but you have 15 minutes to speak.
Thank you. I don't have a big presentation, you'll probably be glad to know. And I hope I can do this in way less than 15 minutes, which you might also be glad to know. And I'm definitely not going to try and answer any questions that I don't have the answer to with absolute certainty. I'm going to say a lot of, I don't know, I'll consider that. Thank you very much for your input. But I'll tell you where we're at right now. The university is now looking at an on-campus smoking and vaping policy. The reason we're looking at that is the General Faculty's Council last spring asked us to do so. The president was very interested in seeing this advance. Committee was struck already over a year ago that includes representatives of the associations, health sciences faculties, and a few members of administration, including myself, Andrew Leach, who is the director of Enterprise Risk Management Programs and Risk Management Services, and my co-chair, Kevin Frise of the health center. Kevin isn't here because he's been devoted pretty much 24 hours a day to the outbreak of the flu virus. So the group was asked fundamentally to put into place a policy that would reduce exposure to secondhand smoke. So we weren't really asked to take a moral or a philosophical position on tobacco or tobacco use or tobacco companies. We were asked to look at people that were exposed to smoke and vapor, perhaps against their will. So our committee has met a number of times, and I'll just be pretty candid about where it's most reasonably headed, and that is towards really joining hundreds of universities across the continent, dozens and dozens across the country, toward a campus that's free of smoke and vapor. So the committee itself feels that this is appropriate, it's the right way to go, it's what a large percentage of our community would like to see. So the question is, how do we get there? When do we get there? So those are some of the questions that are being considered. But this is just the committee speaking, so it's just one group of people, representative as it is. There is a survey out now where we're asking our community to give their own feedback about this question, and it has been advertised for the past 6 days, just I guess out of curiosity, who has seen it and completed it? Zero, good, so that's my job. Communication is my job, so obviously I've done a great job there. But if you were to just go to uab.ca/clear, that's uab.ca/clear, like right now, maybe, you'd find the survey. And we just asked a very few questions. We want to know, what is your experience with smoke and vape on campus? Do you smoke and vape on campus? And what do you think we ought to do about smoking and vaping on campus? So I hope you'll fill it out. It'll be open for another couple of weeks. I can tell you that the sentiment is, so far, is looking like largely what you'd expect. There's lots of people that think we should have no smoking, and there's some people that think that it doesn't matter too much, and then there's some people that think that their smoking is a right that they should be able to do because it's a legal activity. So we're going to have to find our way through those varying viewpoints to come up with some kind of a policy that we'll take to the senior administration and then ultimately the board. Not sure when, maybe the spring, more likely the fall though. So, lots of issues. We think we've got a pretty good list of what the issues, concerns, and problems might be as we move forward with this, the committee's ultimate recommendations. So what I would ask for here would be to see if there's any questions that maybe I could ask and answer about the process. But also anything that you think we might not have considered in our deliberations, or anything you want to make sure is not overlooked as we move forward. So can I just open it up?
Yeah, I can do it, or you can do it, or however you want to do it.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, President Battinger?
Are you ready for questions?
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, so I've been around campus for a long time, potentially, but one of the things I do know is that a few years ago, the 2017 exec ran a survey, or I think that there was a survey run in 2017 already asking a question about this, so I'm curious as to what those responses were, and if you could sort of enlighten us on why this issue is timely right now to come back when we just went through that whole process of legalizing designated smoking zones on our campus. I will say, like, my personal take on the issue is that we should be investing in harm reduction, and so allowing for spaces to exist as such on campus, potentially not as many as we have now, I could get on board with that, but limited spaces for students who are already going to be smoking, may as well just have a safe space for that. Because another thing I will say is, like, and this was brought up during the cannabis discussion, is that if you are smoking cannabis outside of a designated zone, which happens all the time, if you call UAPS, it's not a priority for them, right? There's other real emergencies than a student smoking in a non-smoking zone. And so my question is, like, why take away the spaces if you can just invest in harm reduction and slowly wean people off of this situation rather than just, like, investing in a straight-up cold cut? And also, if you could just, again, talk about the survey results from 2017.
All right. Well, that's a lot of questions and a few assumptions. So let me start and see if I can try to answer the question. How is it that we seem to have a conversation about cannabis and then turn around the next day and talk about tobacco? So the cannabis conversation was forced by the looming legislation. So the university realized that it needed to make a decision about whether to promote or sort of permit smoking of cannabis on campus. So there was about a year for that decision to be made. So honestly, I co-chaired that along with Kevin Friese, who's also co-chairing this meeting and this leading this discussion. There wasn't an interest at that time or an appetite that we were aware of to talk about smoking tobacco or vaping on campus. We follow the city bylaw, which we've pretty much done from the get-go, which says 10 meters from doors and windows, and it seemed to work well enough. So we were about probably halfway through the conversation about cannabis, which was what we were really asked to do, when GFC came forward with this motion. So the motion came from GFC, so I think this is to answer the next question, or part of the question, where did it come from? It really came directly from GFC. So once that committee, our council, asked the administration to do something, administration was obligated to respond. So the request was to develop a, quote, clean air strategy. So what that looks like, we're not sure yet. So that speaks a little bit to the question about taking away zones. There's no commitment to do that or necessarily, although that is, you know, that is where the momentum is, that does seem to be going. So I think that answers a little bit. I hope that answers why it was that we're doing basically two consultations in a relatively short period. I think it answers the question of why now. So I will speak a little bit to the question about taking away the zones, and I think this is a concern we have heard. If we're talking about cannabis zones, which I assume you are, because they're the only ones that are designated zones on campus, and there are three of them at this time, is one of the principles of the group would be let's try not to separate people who inhale substances into classes and have different rules for them. So part of whatever is decided, the logical, the appropriate, the easiest thing to do would be to have a common set of rules. So I think that answers most of what you said.
Yeah, I think it was more of a point of just like taking the harm reduction lens, I think is very important for this, because like you can ban whatever you want to ban, the students are just going to do it anyway. And I've learned that, so.
Oh, absolutely. And I think for, you know, harm reduction versus banning, I'm not sure if they're absolutely incompatible. I won't go there. But the question of whether it's students are going to smoke tobacco or cannabis is the university has isn't really that interested in controlling that. Yeah, they're interested in this case of dealing with the question of people inhaling secondhand smoke and vapor.
Thank you for your presentation, Andrew. So I was also a member of the Campus Clean Air Working Group over the course of, well, I guess since May. And over the course of the summer, we pondered a lot of different ways in which we could approach this, in which we could look at designated zones, which we currently have for cannabis, and look at expanding that to be cannabis and tobacco zones. We also looked at what the after effects of a smoking ban would look like and started looking at ways in which UFs and other, I guess, community people could work to educate the public towards how these new changes are going to be implemented rather than just slapping fines right away. So I think to Akanksha's note there was a harm reduction lens in the working group committee there, in that there would be more of an education campaign through an implementation period as to when fines were actually going to be handed out at a later date. But again, I just want to stress that, like, over the summer, I know, Andrew, you've probably heard me a lot of the committee talking about how designated zones would be much more effective, especially with our residence population. We have 4,200 people living on just this campus alone here, and quite a bit, we do have a 50% international student population here, and quite a few of the students living in residence do use cigarettes or tobacco vaping products, cannabis vaping products, and we already have a pretty substantial problem with the amount of residents that actually use tobacco or whatnot or hookahs or vapes in their rooms. I was also a resident assistant and I got those calls 4 nights a week. So I think just with everything being factored in, I would really push against a complete smoking ban and more towards having like clearly identified zones in which students can use products freely as they see in a place that they can call home. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Councillor Barizawa.
Hey, thanks for your presentation. That was actually really interesting. And I already filled out the survey.
Awesome.
What was I going to say? I already forgot. yeah, I think this is a really interesting conversation. Even if nothing changes, I think it's great for us to have. I was wondering if you knew of any public institutions that have implemented something like this, and kind of what the possible, like what the outcomes were when that was implemented.
Yeah, actually, we've been talking with a few. So there's half a dozen Canadian institutions that are similar to ours that have gone through this. There was a time when I could list them all off, but I tried to write them all down and I couldn't remember. But that includes McMaster, Western, Queens, Dalhousie. Toronto says they're smoke free, but they kind of have a wiggle room in some of the administrative policy side of it. What we have learned is that it's going smoke free on paper is doable. It's never a clean and easy thing. There's always unintended consequences. You will move smoking off the campus, and then suddenly they're gathered on the public street right outside a campus building, for example. Although, interestingly, what we have found is that doesn't happen as much as you might think it does. What we have learned from other campuses is that it's really critical to do a lot of consultation, a lot of communication, give smokers and vapers a lot of time, offer a lot of supports, which we actually do have at the university, and take an approach of education and frankly of compassion toward people that use these products, and then work your way toward a clean campus that's free of tobacco, of smoke and vapor. So and stopping, I mean, eradicating smoking and vaping from campus, it's not going to happen. Our information is that most people actually are law abiding. They want to follow the law, so in that sense, getting towards the target is doable, and others have done it. I think I probably should just speak a little bit to Jared's comments about the. About residences. The schools that we talk to also do ban smoking in residence, and what they have found is that the students will self-select, and if they must, in many cases, if they may choose to not stay in residence, or they may choose to smoke somewhere else. So that appears to be doable. But again, nothing is decided at all. There has not been a decision, as you well know. There is no decision to ban smoking from campus-wide or from the residences. So it's really about getting as much information as we can. And the numbers themselves are only going to be part of the picture, because absolutely we know, because I've read some of the comments, we are not going to please everybody, and some people are going to be very unhappy.
Thank you. No one else is on the speaking list, and we've run out of time.
No.
Okay. So with that, I think that we're good.
Can I ask one more question? I'm not getting an overwhelming feeling about whether you would like to. I guess I thought I would hear a sense that you were really pleased to see us moving toward a smoke-free campus, or I'd hear some strong resistance, but I'm not really hearing either one. So I guess I'm just everyone's just being so polite.
We just need 2/3 of 10 minutes. This is the first extension. Just lift your black with your hands. Not that I'm telling you what to do, but this is how we would do it. Okay, thank you. 10 more minutes.
Oh, 10.
Hey, Councilman Kennedy.
So I guess I just wanted to share my thoughts on this. So currently, so I don't smoke, I don't vape, and I don't smoke tobacco products. And currently, I don't find that I'm affected by secondhand smoke that often as a student. I would say on campus, it's as frequent as I would walking near buildings downtown where you can't smoke within 3 meters. So I haven't noticed much of a problem. The one thing I will say about residences is, first of all, banning smoking altogether isn't, in my opinion, going to work. I know my RAs and I lived in residence in Lister Hall had a hard enough time getting people to listen to the general floor rules. In addition, I wanted to add, because I'm currently living on residence, that I treat where I'm living right now like my home, and it is my home right now. And I think I would have a harder time treating that property as my own if I wasn't allowed to, more or less within the law, do what I liked. I think in your living spaces, clearly not in the units, but outside or whenever, you should be able to consume what you want to consume and do what you want to do on your weekends. And I think that that would, I guess, harbor a lot of frustration in people that live on residence that both want to experience that student life aspect, but also want to feel like they have their own home that they can live in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Conrad.
Yeah, it's so tough because, yeah, we're... when do you withhold people's rights and not? To help give you, I guess, impression or voice, I would agree with what VP Larson and Councillor McKenzie said as well, that we do need to give people a space, a safe place to exercise what is, yes, it may be detrimental and unhealthy to them, but I think, giving that space is probably healthier to the entire body because, that social continuity or that feeling of comfort or home is important for health. And yeah, even as you said, there are ramifications there of will people then show up on streets and stuff in en masse, right? So I think allowing it, but allowing it in the right places. And maybe part of what you're doing, maybe adapting that, I don't know all the details, but I don't think cutting people off entirely is the answer, especially when we're in a position of power that only increases that power divide and probably that feeling of power divide. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gold. So thank you for your presentation. I'm just gonna tell it. I know I can kind of get the vibe that people are against like banning it, but personally speaking, I would love to see a smoke-free campus, and it's just my take. So, yeah, not everyone wants to ban. I mean, not everyone wants to want the idea of banning cigarettes. So,
Point of information.
Yeah.
To Councilor Bowles.
Sure.
Would you be comfortable explaining your criteria a little bit? I'd be interested to hear.
I mean, first of all, I don't think Charlie believe that it doesn't affect any other student. It can sometimes, like passive smoking, like it is harmful. Like, let's say if it is like allowed in campus and someone beside me is smoking, I can technically get affected. And I might not say anything because it's allowed. So yeah, that's my reason.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking to us. At first, when you phrased your question, I didn't realize you were asking for personal opinions. I guess my opinion on this is that it doesn't, like, I kind of agree, like, I don't really notice smoking on campus that much. And I think the only time I ever do notice smoking is when I'm, like, walking outside of Cameron. And, like, those lies by side, like, Tribal Hall, and there's, like, so many people smoking. And, like, maybe I would just like to see less. There's like seems to be like ash posts there for like cigarettes. I'm like, I would just like to see that moved away from a door or something, so I'm not smelling that every single time I walk up. But that's literally the only time I notice it on campus. And I see people smoking on campus a lot more than I smell it or notice it. So I would agree with everyone that it probably should be banned, but just like away from doors and windows.
Yeah, the law is 10 meters from doors and windows, but I think that. Probably the biggest issue with when you smell is when people are not following the rules.
Thank you, VP Larson. Perfect. So I think hearing a lot of, I guess, comments around the room that people are favoring designated zones, or designated zones are not moving to a total ban, but I think all in all, like a win-win situation that allows those who want to smoke or use cannabis products and those who want to avoid it would be to just keep for the designated zone strategy. We've already worked for a year to identify four of those zones, and we got one taken away, but we can look at another potential zone for something else. But I just think that there is a lot of, like, I mean, consultation's great, and we can have this conversation as much as we want here to get as many inputs as we need, but it just seems like a really clear-cut win-win situation would be to work towards designated zones.
Yeah, sorry, can I have a question?
Okay, hi, I'm over here. I just wanted to say thank you for talking. I kind of have a bit of a different perspective. So over the last year, I've been doing research on neurodegeneration in relation to tobacco, vaping, cannabis, and whatnot. So obviously, I have a very strong opinion on this. With this research also comes with consultation with MS patients who, I don't know if you know this already, but MS can be triggered by smoking with tobacco and vaping products. So talking to these patients and understanding, engaging why they still participate in these activities even after diagnoses. And so a lot of that is because it is, once again, an addiction, and it does affect those around them. So with knowing this and kind of going along campus, you notice it a lot more. So I'm kind of a little bit on the different end of things. I think I notice it quite often, just because I think I'm quite cognizant of the effects that it has, especially being from a family full of smokers. Like, it's something that you definitely do notice. So yeah, I definitely agree. Like, it's very hard for people to lean off of it. So having these designated spots, like BP Larson was saying, is great, but you know, obviously we need to do more than that, I feel like, as well, to really portray these harmful effects you know, that these substances are having, because at the end of the day, they are harmful to more than just the user, but to those around them. So yeah, that's kind of my perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a point, I spent many hours on campus, first looking for the cannabis zones, and now more interested in where tobacco could be smoked. I have to tell you, it is a lot more challenging than you would imagine. Not only are our buildings fairly densely packed together, but we have to consider places where a person could go that is available in the winter as well. So that cuts down a lot of space, a lot of space. So a designated space that where people could gather, smoke, vape, that would not interfere with others, it's shockingly difficult to do. So I just gonna put that up there.
So just continuing on with stemming sentiment of disease and noticing it, I've kind of suffered with asthma my whole life, so I like probably notice cigarette smoking a lot more than other people do. Because it kind of triggers a disease where I can't breathe. So I really appreciate that we do have these designated zones. Like, I'm not for a smoke-free campus, because, like, if you want to smoke, that's your choice, but it does affect other people. So I like this idea of designated zones, because then I know where people will be smoking for sure, and I can, like, plan routes, like, around that and be like, oh, maybe don't go there, because I might just fucking collapse. It's good to have those zones, and I think it's better to have more of those zones, because it makes it predictable. And it's just, like, I know, and then people will know where to smoke. It just makes it easier for everyone. Like, yeah, that's
good. Thank you. Can I ask, to maybe challenge you a little bit? I was clear. We were tasked with reducing people's exposure to secondhand smoke. And to me, that was a fairly clear mandate. We weren't here to be the moral vanguard for the universe. And I wasn't prepared to lead that, but I will ask you just from that point of view. There are many who believe that smoking is should end, and I'm wondering if anybody thinks that there is any kind of ethical or moral or leadership obligation we might have as an organization to tell the world that we've moved past tobacco. I'll just ask if anybody wants to comment or respond. And I would suggest that a designated zones would not do that, would not achieve that leadership.
Yeah, I can answer that. I think that it is a cultural thing for a lot of people to smoke, so I think that getting rid of that, especially on, you know, treaty land, would be kind of disrespectful. You know, if you want more indigenous students to come to this campus, we should make them feel welcome here with stuff.
I think that, you know, designated zones on campus would be, you know, the best option. And if your mandate is to lower the amount of secondhand smoke that people are exposed to, then I think that just by reducing all smoking to those designated zones, whether that be cannabis or tobacco, is probably the best and safest way to do that, in my opinion.
Well, I guess I would argue, I mean, if you really want to eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke, then there'd be no smoking.
I didn't say eliminate, I said reduce.
Right, so I mean...
I thought the mandate was to reduce the secondhand
yeah,
smoke.
Yeah, right, okay, but you will, but just to be clear, we would not, yeah, we would certainly not eliminate it. It would be, there would be, smoke is going to be blowing around from those zones. So, yeah, it would be the, you know, probably the best possible that we could do. Would be to at least get people away as far away as is reasonable. So point taken. Good. Thank you.
We are again out of time. It's been 10 minutes. There is no one on the list right now. There's one person on the list. We're out of time unless there's a motion to stand and we're going to be done.
Can I motion to let one ask a question?
I can also just do it during the break if you're going to go to break
right away. You're going to break right away.
Right away.
So,
yeah, never mind.
Okay, thank you. So no more motion. So I'll thank our presenter for coming in. Okay, 7:30, it's been 90 minutes and we've had two presentations, so we're making good anyway. So we're going to go to a break.
My goodness.
Hey, President Badigar.
Present.
VP Agarwal.
Present.
VP Brown.
Here.
VP Sad.
Present.
VP Larson.
Here.
Governor Lee.
Here.
Councilor McKenzie.
Yep.
Councilor Conrad.
Hey.
Councilor Marcus Alba.
Happy Darts and Breaking Hearts.
Councilor Beasley. Councilor Beasley.
Up here.
Councilor Chen. Councilor Dixon.
Yep.
Councilor Draper.
Not Hacking Darts, Padma.
Councilor Isaac. Councilor Esmail.
Yeah.
Councilor Marinakis.
Present.
Councilor Kidd.
Yeah.
Councilor C.
Here.
Councilor Og, or Councilor Bose.
Here.
Councilor Batiki. Councilor Harris.
Here.
Councilor Sunday. Councilor Nguyen. Councilor Blondin.
Here.
Councilor Douche.
Yep.
Councilor Venetia.
Yep.
Councilor Dillon.
Here.
Councilor Katera. Councilor Syed. Okay, I'll see you all in 15 minutes for the longest meeting of my life.
Thank you.
How was that for you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
What?
I don't know. The whole thing, like, no, not the first one, I guess. Like, I was trying to understand, like, how was that? Like, what did you see there?
I was trying to like does she have best line interest? Like,
you know what I'm saying? Like, does she have like an agenda?
Yeah, because like she said she's
also when did you see dinner?
Plus she said she has like all kind of jobs.
Well, yeah, not like them.
Is she paid?
Is she
$1 million?
But then she would have to get some time back.
Yes, she would.
Yes, she does actually care about her business. She does. It's some, like, to
I'm kind of tracking the fuse. stuff on the thing, like where people like, for what she's saying. I appreciate when the paint show was like, actually, wait, what she said, because that's really about to know what people want.
I'm just like 20 hours.
Thanks. Take our seats. Thomas. Thanks. Thank you. Okay, we're going to continue. Our next presentation is the one moved by VP Stat earlier. I need him to be here so that I can talk to him, though. Hello, VP Stat. VP Stat, can you please provide us with a quick abstract of the presentation?
So...
Thank you.
Motion to suspend standing orders and move Oasis presentation before this presentation. Because it's sort of time sensitive and there's people who need to be in the room before the presentation is over.
That is in order. This motion is non-debatable, non-amendable, but it does require a seconder. Councillor Conrad, thank you. And it requires 2/3 to pass. So, all in favor of switching the orders of the presentations, please raise your placards.
Yep, that's 2/3.
Did you count that?
No, you can just see it very easily. Like, I don't know why. We have to be like, let's look.
Is there any opposition? Okay, motion carries. No, the motion is non-debatable, unfortunately. Apologies. So we're going to switch orders of the presentation then. So I'll move back to the main agenda. Title is Organization for Arts and Interdisciplinary Studies, Faculty Association Membership Fee Presentation. The Organization of Arts Students and Interdisciplinary Studies is seeking to renew its faculty association membership fee. In accordance with Bylaw 3100, Section 4, this presentation is seeking approval from Students Council to move forward towards referendum simultaneous with the March executive elections. This presentation will outline the consultation as required by Bylaw 3100, Section 1. The proposed fee, $3 per student per semester over a period of 2 years, will enable Oasis to be in a better financial position to provide art students with important services such as granting as well as events to celebrate arts at the University of Alberta. Agarwal moves the presentation. I'll remind everyone that I am a counselor on Oasis, so if you, make sure you hold me to a high standard during this process. Agarwal moves. Is there a seconder? Councillor Bargadel, there it is. Is there any opposition to this presentation? If there is none, then I will throw it over to our presenter, Kyle Daniels. We'll have 15 minutes and I'll show you. I don't have any slides, but I have like the presentation. Like I have this. I can also control
can you,
plus.
Yeah. Perfect.
So you have 15 minutes.
Yeah, turn on cup.
Yeah.
Just that one right there, just half the bottom.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Kyle Daniel and I'm with Oasis. Right before we begin, I would like to thank Vice President Agarwal, as well as Rebecca and Jenna from Discover Governance for the knowledge and resources that they provided to me in improving this proposal. And you guys will see the improvement in quality, and it is due to them. Moving on from that is our introduction. So I changed the slides a little bit this time, and I did so in order to kind of streamline the amount of information I was going to provide to you guys. In this current format, I believe you guys have the information you need for this FAMF. Just to break it down really quick, we're going to go over the context of the FAMF, our refund mechanism, our current budget for this year, the little bit of consultation we did. After that, I'm going to go over quickly the granting process. Included in the package are the three forms that we provide to art students in order for them to get granting. After that, I'm just going to quickly go over how we represent art students with the arts faculty. And lastly, I just want to go over future plans really quick to show you folks where exactly this money is going in the future. So, first up is context, really quick. Oasis is asking to increase the FAMP. Previously, it was $2.50 per student per semester to $3 per student per semester. The term duration for this mandate would be between September 2020 and April 2022, so a mandate of 2 years. And just really quick, the scope of this. So any student enrolled in the Faculty of Arts is a member of OASIS and is susceptible to this fee. As per OASIS Constitution, Article 3, Section 3.0. Moving on from that is our refund mechanism. So the way we do it is students can either come into our office, Humanities 210, or they can send us an email at oasis@ualberta.ca asking for a refund. We only give refunds for the current semester, and also we issue receipts so that people aren't kind of like continuously coming back asking for refunds, so that we have some means of tracking it. And as of today, no one has requested a refund. Moving on is our revenue breakdown. Now these are estimates from this, so from the fall from 2019 to winter 2020. And as you can see, the FAMP makes up a significant proportion of our funding. A little bit of it comes from the Faculty of Arts itself, as well as locker sales. The design competition merch so far hasn't created any revenue for us. But I would like to report that locker sales, as of last Thursday, have made $2,050. So that would be the entirety of the fall semester and a little bit of this one, as well as Arts Gala tickets. Just want to make sure I'm giving you guys the right information. After Arts Gala, I'd also like to report that we made a profit of $744 off of tickets. Moving on from that is the current budget for fall 2019. Right off the bat, I want to point out something that will not add up is our food committee budget. As you guys can see, it's estimated for $1,500. However, that was an initiative that we ultimately tried to make time for, but it between granting an Arts Gala, it never came to be. So our plans for that money is we're just going to vote on it at our next council meeting what exactly we're going to do with it. Moving on from that, it says here that our locker system, estimated $300, we spent nothing because we had a member of OASIS do his own upgrade to it. However, we do need to purchase new materials for the locker system itself, as well as general upkeep. So some of that money will end up still being used in the future. After that is our book swap. Again, another initiative that ended up not happening in the fall, but we're hoping to at least get to the preliminary stages in the winter in order to start setting this up. I know, for example, we have two of our exec talking about it right now, and they're working on getting it underway quickly. Another thing I want to bring up with food committee is it was a portfolio that was passed from exec position to exec position, and they were all they'd undertaken too much already, and it was just something that they couldn't get done. However, after the completion of Arts Gala, it's now been passed to our VP events, as well as the director for VP events. And they should now have the time to commit to the food committee. Moving on from that is our current budget for this semester. As you can see, granting is lower than, for this semester, and that's just because of the way we decide to split granting. I'll go more into it in detail later, just to keep this concise, but Arts Gala was a significant portion of this budget, and the reason why is OASIS subsidizes the tickets for Arts Gala. It's come to my understanding that without the subsidy, the tickets themselves would be $50. However, we subsidize them so that they're only $8. And the reason for this being is it lends itself to more accessibility to Oasis events, which I think is very important because with the way things are right now, you know, with the tuition, cap removal and everything, times are tough. And it's important that people still have accessibility to these events. Other than that, advertisement is 150. That is one thing that we want to commit more to this semester's advertising, because we feel like last semester could have been better. After that, administration is just kind of office supplies, other things like that, the printing that we offer. After that, the election, the $200, that's put towards people who choose to like print posters and stuff, material for the election itself. The design competition is $0, mainly because originally, I'm mistaking myself with the case comp. The design competition is another initiative that we haven't fully realized how exactly we want to execute it yet. So there hasn't been any, we don't expect any expenses with that. Moving on to the case comp. As of like today, things have changed with the case comp. We recently lost the partner we were originally going to partner with. However, after contacting the BSA, we understand they do case competitions as well, and we're in preliminary talks to host a joint case competition with BSA. And we believe this is a good idea because they have institutional knowledge of how to run case competitions, and we can learn and emulate from them, which is very important. Moving on from this budget is the allocations of the FAMF for fall 2019 and winter 2020. That is the pie chart on your left with the primary colors. So the breakdown for this is the granting is 52%, the events is 34%, and our outreach is at 14% of the FAMF. And it has recently come to our attention that as per the last campaign, there was a certain expectation that Oasis commit 50% to granting, 30% to events, and 20% to outreach. And we just want to acknowledge that like this is something that we were not aware of. It was something that was not transitioned to us. However, we would like to ask if, and this can come up later, if the SU think it's important for us to codify it in our constitution, because one thing we noticed with our own advertising last semester, which is outreach, is it was lacking. And if we were to put more attention to it by boosting our outreach to 20%, if that's something that the council thinks is in the best interests of students. Other than that, so the chart on our right is the remainder of our revenue for this year. As you can see, a little bit goes to events, again, because of Arts Gala and how important it is to subsidize some of these things. But the rest of it goes to like office supplies, administration, general stuff like that, that isn't used towards events, outreach, or renting. Moving on from that is our consultation. So as required by Students Union Bylaw 8200, Section 7, Oasis consulted with our department associations, and the meeting minutes are attached. They're also improved as well. After that, we hosted an AGM, an annual general meeting, with just general students from the Faculty of Arts. As per our own constitution, Article 7, Sections 5 and 6, as well as Student Union Bylaw 8200, Section 7. Again, there are attached minutes for that meeting as well. And I believe there's one more attached minutes, which was a counselor meeting we held on December 10th, I want to say, 9th or 10th, I can't really remember. I think it was the 10th, regarding what we thought about the fact that Kennedy knew where exactly we wanted to go and what we thought was best for students. Lastly, a Google form was utilized, and I understand that this was not extensive consultation. However, for myself, I had never run a consultation campaign ever. So I used the avenues that I thought were available to me at the time, which included getting the information out for the survey to the department associations, as well as the arts newsletter. And if you look at the very end of that document, there's a QR code which I used to get the form out there. And I know our department associations, they did disperse it. Whether or not people did it is another question. As for the arts newsletter, it's very hard to tell how many of our responses came from that. And going to the departments, there's a breakdown in communication between our organization and our ability to speak to them, because some of their emails that they use no longer work. I do know that it did make it to some classrooms, but for example, I know specifically for the political science, none of my professors received it from higher, and they say there was speculation that it was due to a breakdown in the ability for the political science department to sort of intake this information and disperse it to everyone else. So moving on from that, I just quickly want to go over some of our responses, just very quickly. Again, I understand it's only not 98, it's not extensive in any way, but for the year of study on the left, I think we got a decent spread for each year. Obviously for fifth year it was lacking. And first year, it's very hard to like make them aware of institutions on campus because they are first years and they're so overwhelmed with information. And, but other than that, second, third, and fourth year were somewhat evenly spread. Moving over to the next chart. So number one was if you're not involved in SU governance at all, and on the right is if you are like very involved in student governance. And as you can see, we got a lot of responses from people who are not involved at all, which I think, although it was a small sample size, I still think is an important indicator of where exactly this form made it to. Moving on from that is the responses. I don't have much to say about this, to be honest. The 2 years was very prominent for us. And a reason why I was worried.
Sorry, Kyle, I have to stop you.
Yeah.
We just hit 15 minutes. So standing order can usually stand for 10. If 2/3 of counselors request that, so we'll make a motion, but if you're in favor of extending by 10 minutes, please raise your placards or raise your hands. Okay, is there any opposition? Is that 3? Okay. Thank you. That's 2/3, and you're good to go for 10 more minutes.
Cool.
I'll make it quick.
So a reason why we wanted to go with 2 years, and judging from responses, is the economic uncertainty was cited a lot. People didn't exactly know what the future held, and they weren't comfortable setting in this fee, although it is very low, some people would make that argument, for 4 years. So we figured it would be in the best interest of students to set it at 2. And then 2 years from now, we can look back on everything that OASIS has done and reevaluate that. Moving on from that is our granting process. I'm gonna go over this really quick. So what happens is OASIS forms a committee, a granting committee. It's comprised of our VP Finance, a Director of Granting, and 3 representatives, one from Social Science, one from Humanities, and one from Fine Arts. We really like to intake volunteers from students at large. However, if we're unable to do so, we will use members of OASIS Council. This year, I think we were pretty good at getting in just people from students at large. After that, the granting forms go out. As you can see in the document, there are three. There's one for department associations, one for groups, and one for individuals. It's important to note that department associations are only given grants in the fall, and this is because and they are also giving precedence over individuals and groups in the fall specifically. This is because we want to support our department associations and the events they hold. And that's why they're given precedence in the fall, but then during the winter, we don't do department association grants afterwards. This is because we want to give them money in the fall so that they can make their budgets for the year. And going back to the budget, this is something that I failed to mention, is that is why granting is higher in the fall. It's because we're expecting more department association grants. So these forms are sent out, they're brought back in. Something that's important to note is that if we needed more information, we're more than willing to ask for them to clarify documents or to provide more. And until they do so, they don't receive any funding. First things first, we check our department association forms, grant them funds, and then anything that's left over we use for individuals and groups. And then after that, funds are dispersed. Moving on from that, I just want to quickly go over how OASIS represents the students in the Faculty of Arts. So OASIS actually works as a direct line of communication between the Faculty of Arts hire and the student body in the Faculty of Arts. An example of this being the Building and Humanities was having security issues, and the Faculty of Arts wanted to take measures in order to properly secure the building. However, some of the actions they wanted to take would have affected our department associations. So OASIS was able to act as a bridge between certain department associations to have their voice heard with the Faculty of Arts in order to mediate the situation. Not only this, OASIS holds monthly meetings with the Dean of Teaching and Learning. And in these meetings, and also interested parties. So the Dean of Teaching and Learning really likes to use OASIS as a sort of my idea board. Like if they have an idea, they bring it forward to OASIS on behalf of students, and we generally give them feedback. And at times if they ask us to, we will bring in students from the student body for more feedback. Another thing that OASIS does that is important is there are a bunch of committees that need to be filled. And OASIS acts as that means of communication so that committee chairs can get in contact with students that are interested. And this is very important. I personally served on the Academic and Grades Appeal Board, and it is vital for students' voices to be heard on those committees. Otherwise, it becomes an echo chamber of professors and people that aren't students, and they're dictating, you know, the future of students. And in that way, it's very important that this means of communication stays open. After that, just going to go quickly, future plans. I saw some of you at Arts Gala. Our future plans are to improve it, because it is a staple of OASIS and what we do. We're very proud of it. But not only this, we want to get the case competition started, as it's a good way to get students out and engaged in policymaking. And then food committee, we also, as sort of an events outreach, ArtsCon, which is coming up. ArtsCon is a event where we allow students to come forward with stuff like research that they're proud of, and it allows them to showcase it. Same thing as Arts Gala is a celebration of the arts community, and I'd argue ArtsCon is the same. Also, we want to increase advertising. That's very important to us. We want more people to know who we are, and we want to increase awareness of these committees as well. Lastly, before we go into questions, there's just one thing I want to answer very quickly regarding a question that was asked last time. So on one of the pie charts from a previous year, there was a little spot for sponsorships. And the question was raised, where did that money go? One thing that I can report is that those sponsorships fell apart. We were unable to acquire a relationship with these sponsors. However, I can say that our exec are working on rebuilding relationships with partners to offer art students more services. Other than that, I have nothing else to say. If you guys have questions.
Okay, so we just have a little over 3 minutes. So not of you, once you're on, VP Egger, while you were first.
So thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you so much, Kyle, for the presentation. So I just wanted to say that I've been working very closely with Kyle as well as the rest of the OASIS executive team in conjunction with Discover Governance as well as the Student Governance Officer to make sure that this this proposal and some of the changes from the quite so arduous conversation that happened 2 weeks ago maintains the integrity and maintains the standards that it should have. And I'm very impressed with the work that's gone into this and the efforts that have been put into place into making sure that this is the best quality proposal out there, as well as really ensuring that students are feeling that these changes are transparent as well as really representing them. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
So I just wanted to say thank you for coming back here. I think it shows a lot of courage and really high quality of OASIS to improve upon the presentations and really last 2 weeks ago I was wrong. I said that I was not comfortable voting for you guys, but after this I was wrong. I think you guys are able to take feedback from both people that aren't in your faculty and the ones that are, and I just want to applaud you for that. I think you guys have shown tremendous courage coming back here, and absolutely, you should be able to put that question forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Dixon?
I guess I'm echoing everybody else's sentiments. Last week, you guys got asked a lot of different questions, and definitely very much not lost on me how much stress and that cost and work that went into this as a result, and it really shows. And I think this is exactly the presentation and the changes that kind of needed to be made. And like I said last week, definitely going to be voting in favor of this because I love the work that OASIS does, so keep up the great work.
Appreciate it. President Battinger?
Say
57.
As someone who was a proponent of OASIS but was still very critical of the proposal, I am really happy with the new proposal and the level of professionalism that unfortunately we had to ask for, but we have now. So I am going to be voting in favor as well and looking forward to your campaign in the fall, in the winter.
Thank you. We have 30 seconds left, but if there's no one else.
Can I make a statement?
Yeah, 20 seconds. Okay. I know also know that it was an issue with you guys having OASIS members on this, so right now I'd like to ask for them to abstain as well. Okay, if there's no more questions, we have 6 seconds. Okay, you have 4 seconds, so
Four seconds.
We're out of time, so is there a motion to extend, or are we done?
Can I motion to suspend standing orders to move the approval just on the agenda?
Yeah, you can do that. So the presentation's over. So thank you, Mr. Daniels. Okay, I hope you're all ready to see a fair bit of Turkey with Robert's rules here.
Is this not already on the general orders?
It is.
So why are we special ordering to suspend standing orders now to vote now when we could just wait for the agenda item to come up?
Well, you'd have to ask the person next to you. So what one can do, and it's up to the individual members of council, but there's a motion to suspend the rules and consider, which is when one is allowed to consider something out of its scheduled order. So any member of council has the right to make the motion, and then we vote on it.
My rule is that reasoning was that there's sort of some members in the room that want to be part of the voting process before they have to leave.
For sure. So the motion is on the table, so we have to vote for it. But it needs a seconder. Is there a seconder for the motion, Councillor Hadouche? Thank you. The motion is non-debatable. It's also non-amendable. And it requires two-thirds because there's pending standing orders. So if you are in favor of changing the order of the agenda such that we vote on the fountain next, like immediately right now, please raise your placards or your hand. I'll up again.
Never say I don't do my job, okay? I know you'll talk about it.
I do. We respect you.
Okay, is there any opposition? Are there any abstentions? Seeing that motion carries, we had two-thirds. Okay, now unfortunately we cannot debate this motion because we just had a presentation on it, and we cannot debate a motion on the same day as the presentation due to our standing orders. But that can be suspended as well if anybody feels courageous enough for that. At VPAGOL. Councilor Draper.
I motion to suspend standing orders to vote on the Oasis Fact question.
Okay, that's an order.
You just
move it in the agenda order, but we can't vote on it because we can't present. These are your standing orders, people. Okay, so we can't vote for something to debate something on the day. But we're all clear kind of on why we can't. Okay, so that's moved by Draper, seconded by Agarwal. Thank you. So all in favor of allowing us to debate this, please raise your placard.
You need to vote on it, not
debate.
Voting or debating?
Are we both debating slash, which will lead to voting eventually?
I don't want to debate on it.
Take control of your house. Is there any opposition to this motion?
No. They deserve it. I motion to move it to question.
Of course, you can't because there's one of those.
Unfortunately.
Okay, hold on. Okay, hello. So the motion to allow us to debate carries, that received two-thirds. So now we enter debate. If no one wants to debate...
Call the question.
Okay, there's no one on the speaking list, so we cannot call a question. Only call a question when you want to supersede the speaking list.
Seconder.
If no one talks, you just vote. The question only exists... And when there's a speaking list, you're like, you know what, this speaking list isn't it, we're skipping it, no more speaking lists, we're voting. If there's no list, you can't supersede the list, therefore we can't call the question. I was trained really well by Speaker Patton. There he is. All right. You want to be on the speaking list?
I just give council heads up. If anyone wants to be,
like 4 minutes.
Oh, sorry. I'm standing regardless, but if anybody wants any like nitty-gritty financial information, feel free to ask me a point of information. But yeah, I'm not going to be speaking in favor or against the motion. I'm going to be abstaining completely.
Thank you. Councillor Draper?
Similar to Councillor Beasley, despite the allowance in bylaw, I will also be abstaining. But if anybody wants to ask a question about Oasis academic advocacy or the case comp, the design comps, arts comp, that kind of stuff, they can go right to me.
Thank you. Seeing as there is no one else on the speaking list, we can vote. So this is just a simple majority to pass, so 50% of the vote. So all in favor of approving the question
seconder.
To go to students in the election, please raise your placards.
Seconder?
Oh, yeah, we need a seconder, sorry.
Jesus.
Okay, all in favor? Thank you. Is there any opposition to this motion? Are there any abstentions to this motion? Or just to like your abstentions noted?
Yes, please.
Okay, Thomas, you got that. That motion carries. Right, thank you. And again, I invite you to change your standing orders if you want to. They're yours. We'll now move back to our presentation that was moved by BC Stat earlier. Do you have a quick abstract for us?
Yeah, like a 30-second abstract.
Please. Go for
All right, folks.
There we go. Student Cares comes to present to Students' Council. They are our manager of the health and dental plan. They want to quickly go over some basic information, sort of an introduction to what the health and dental plan is, how it's been performing, and it also serves as sort of an introduction to a couple counselor nominations that will hopefully happen later tonight for the formation of the health and dental plan committee, which will go into a bit more detail on what they show you. So it's a very high-end overview, and I expect with how late it is, it might be even a bit quicker than they had originally intended. But the presenters are going to be Robin Hatches, who some of you might remember as well, Vice President of Operations and Finance, as well as Chris. Oh, and Speaker as well, and Kristen from Student Care, so I'll let them get to it.
All right, so thank you, VP Sapp. We just need a second on this motion to have the presentation. VP Brown, thank you. Is there any opposition? If there's none, then they can begin. You have 15 minutes, and then I will set you off that. So go for it.
Hi, everybody. Democracy is exhausting. I'm at home. I'm actually really happy to be here. I don't get to come to Edmonton very often. I thought I would take the reins tonight and give Robin, my esteemed colleague, just like a nanosecond between his former role with the SU and in these very chambers and his new role with us at Student Care. So I'm all you got tonight. Okay, fun facts. I'm going to skip all of the professional stuff. I have a background in nonprofit development, which is business if you don't want to make money, I suppose. But I'm also an advanced cold water scuba diver. Nothing to do with the health plan at all, but far more interesting than the rest of what I was going to say. Okay, so the point of today was simply to give you a little bit of background so that you feel comfortable with the work that we're doing behind the scenes, the work that we do with the executive, and hopefully even feel inspired to maybe join a committee or help us out with some of your feedback and engagement. I wanted to give you a bit of an update about what we do for you, but I also want to remind you what your role is, because I think that's an important part of it too. I'm going to skip all of the other stuff in the middle. Like that. So, getting right down to it, what we essentially do is, I guess I like to say I wear two hats. I am both your broker and consultant, but the broader context of our company, we are also your administrator. So in a typical employee plan, you would have an internal HR department that handled enrollments and educating new employees about their benefits and things like that, and then you would have a separate outside broker and consultant. In this case, because the student union world is so unique, insurance companies don't actually understand the nature, I guess, of student participation, and Student Care kind of was born under the idea of being able to do everything as a one-stop shop. I had no intention of working in insurance. In fact, if you sit next to me on a plane and I want to put you to sleep, I will tell you that I work in insurance. But if I actually want to talk to you, I will tell you that I work with universities all across Canada. I will tell you that I engage students and mentor and explain the nitty-gritty of this particular program. I will tell you that it's a public relations job as well as financial management. And that really I lean far more to the public engagement, the student engagement part, than the pure boring insurance side. Which is to say, though, that we have to do both sides very well. So you will see me and Robin come to council, mostly in the consultant role. We're here to talk to you as policy and decision makers. So it will be about reporting, it will be about strategic vision, it will be about plan finances, benefit changes, and that sort of higher level stuff. But behind us is an entire company actually supporting your members, and maybe you in your other hats as a student. So if you have a claim that you want to fill out, if you want to enroll a dependent, if you start your academic year in January, you want to figure out how to access benefits, all of that is taken care of by our member services team and our, I guess, the sort of other side of the company, which I actually, as you can see, allocate a slightly bigger role to. I'm aware of my own unimportance. Robin, that timing.
That's your slide.
Okay, that's not even going to. In part, I think the biggest thing coming forward in the next few months will be the reporting that we do. Because it's all well and good for me to tell you that we're doing a great job, but somebody should actually be looking at those reports, and to that I will ask these staff to bring those forward, and that's where we really want you to get engaged and come and sit on the committee, because staring at spreadsheets takes way too long to bring to council. Part of what we do will be not just measuring past claims trends and how students are currently using the plan, but actually looking at healthcare trends and seeing what we might be missing. Is there unmet need that we need to be examining? So things like new drugs on the market that might have a particular impact for this demographic, or maybe changes in how students are accessing care on campus. So it's my job to bring those forward and do a little investigation in anything that I see coming that we need to be more inclusive of. And I steal a lot of my best ideas from questions that you might raise. So in a way, don't hold back, although we all want to get out of here, but ask me lots of questions, because I take away little grains and it simmers, and I come back with new ideas that often are replicable for other student societies and student associations that we work with too. So I rely on your feedback to drive the evolution of health plans, not just for you, but for all of my clients. So we have, why do we even have a health endowment plan as a student union? You sponsor it, you are the policy holder, and you stepped into the breach it's about 2009, because there weren't any other stakeholders coming forward, right? So this is not something that typically comes from a student association background, although it has evolved to do so in Canada, because of that need to have a mechanism for students to access health and dental benefits when you're not working full time. Buying individual insurance has always existed, but it is not available if you have a pre-existing condition. It is more expensive, depending on various factors, age, gender, and it's often just beyond the expense that a student would be able to provide. So thank you and your predecessors for stepping forward and managing a student service that has become, by far and away, one of the largest services that the SUU manages. For example, over $5 million in claims were paid last year. That's $5 million that went back into the pockets of your students because of the health and dental plan. The plan's been around since 2009, and you have a unique aspect in which the SUU plan is entirely opt-outable. So it's never been a plan where you had to have other coverage or demonstrate or document other coverage. We'd rather have free and unfettered access to take advantage of it or to opt out. It's actually not a model that is very common, but it's one that's worked really well for you, and it's been really warmly received because it opens up that level of choice. Like, your students really appreciate that. We cover stuff. I break it down to health, dental, vision, and then the travel plan, which is an excellent plan if any of you are going to be doing a co-op or internship or field work. The travel plan is a far more affordable option for your students going away in exchange. Alberta Health Services, and in fact, Canadian provincial Medicare as we know it, really doesn't do a lot if you're not sick. It's really designed to be there in an emergency. So hospitals, doctor visits, emergencies. The SU plan is actually designed to be preventative. I want you to use it even when you're well. So please remember that. Go get your teeth cleaned. Go for a physio appointment, because you all carry backpacks, and it's doing untold damage to your spinal column. Buy eyeglasses. If you don't think you need eyeglasses, at least go get your eyes checked. The plan is there to be your resource and to be used by you and by your members, even when it's not an emergency. So I like to say that we managed the health plan as an experience, because it occurred to me that you can't see insurance. I can't give it to you to unwrap. So at a certain point, the way that your members value the SU plan and the way that they see it as a service is depends on how well we do in giving them that experience. Do we answer the questions correctly when they walk through the door in the sub-building? Are we available when they call? Do the online technology and infrastructure aspects work when a student needs to download a claim form or enroll a dependent? And we take a great deal of concern and care over being able to deliver the kind of service that we think your students deserve and that you want us to do. If we do our jobs right, it is the SU plan, and you get all the credit, and we're just the elves working in the background. To that end, we have a bunch of different resources, human, technology, and otherwise, and we're constantly upgrading and evolving because you're all early adopters, and it's actually really hard to manage the experience to the level that we hold ourselves to and be on the edge of that. So occasionally our website is not up to date or our technology lags a little and we grit our teeth, but just know that we're working on it in the background, that it's important to us, and that we recognize how important it is to your members. Nah. I'll just skip along. We have a bunch of different outreach points that we engage in to make sure that your members know about the plan, because it's not doing anyone any good if students aren't actually using it. And we want to make sure that the outreach is there in various different ways, mostly electronic at this point. We're really moving away, I think it's obvious, from print and sort of like heavy text base, and just trying to make sure that there's a way for your members to engage with us when they need us. How much faster I can go? Okay, so one of the best things we do for you is save your students money. Ultimately, a team of actuaries sit in an office and determine how much your insurance plan is going to cost. I have my own element that I play in reviewing those and doing some financial analysis on your side of the table, but it's not magic, it's math. So you get what you pay for, and you pay for what you get. And if at the end of the day, all we do is accept insurance, then we that's great, that's how employee plans have worked for 100 years. But what student care did that kind of set off the spark was use our position and the fact that we work with 95 different student associations. We have now over 1 million members, and we negotiate direct discounts with health practitioners, so optometrists, dentists, physiotherapists, massage therapists. And if we do our jobs in that regard, we're actually reducing the cost of that expense to your members before it ever becomes a claim. So for example, there's a 30% discount available if you use our dental network. Now we have 45, 50 different dentists in Edmonton and probably 2,000 across Canada should you want to come out to Vancouver for your dental checkup, or home if you are traveling, visiting, that kind of thing. So you can use any one of our network members all across Canada, and here in Alberta, the discount is a 30%. That enables us to have the actual insured coverage that you pay for, that which is covered by your premiums, the benefit analysis that I talk about doing with the executives and with members of the committee, at 70%, and you get that extra 30% essentially for free. That's the nugget that started the network, saving money, and I'll leave it, at that for now. We also have a pharmacy network, which was really hard to do because the regulatory environment in negotiating discounts on drugs in Canada is actually really difficult. So it took us a long time, but we have now just a national network with Rexall providing a discount on both the cost of drug, but also markup and dispensing fees. And then as like a little extra bonus, if you go to a Rexall, you can get an additional discount on drugstore stuff. That's good too. Skip all this. There's a bunch of other networks. I encourage you to use them. You can take your insurance and you can go anywhere. If you have a favorite dentist or a favorite physiotherapist, I'm certainly not saying that you couldn't receive your reimbursement or make a claim. But if you are looking for an advantage, being able to go use our website and find a network dentist or physio or many practitioners who offer such a discount, it's going to really stretch your health plan dollars. Encourage that. Okay, claims. This is where I get to put aside my public relations hat and turn back into my math nerd self. And what I really like about the claims experience is that I see a broad spectrum of usage. I look for outliers. I look for areas that are maybe being underclaimed or areas where the claims are coming in dramatically outside of the scope of what I expected. And this year, I'm pleased to say that your claims are textbook. Starting in 2018, you negotiated some improvements in the coverage, particularly to eyeglasses and health practitioners, so that would be chiro, physio, massage therapy, and you increase them about 50%. And coincidentally, I now see, oh, I'm skipping ahead of myself, I'll come back. Here we go. The changes that you made then are having exactly the intended impact that, as we see it roll out now. So paramedical claims, the actual coverage was increased about 50%, and we're seeing claims rise in that category about 50%. Same for vision care, maybe a little over. And then dental basics, so that would be fillings, root canals, oral surgery, anything other than your checkups and cleanings. We deliberately increased coverage in that category about 25%, and we're seeing a textbook corresponding increase in claims. I raise this because you will see in the future, especially if you come sit on that wonderful committee that I keep talking about, you will see that the increase in claims is potentially going to lead to an increase in premium. That was not unanticipated. In fact, that was exactly the intended impact that we have, because there's no point in having a health and dental plan if it's not covering the things that your members need. And if they need it and they're using it, then as long as we plan ahead and we have the right financial strategy, we should be able to absorb any cost increases without actually increasing the fee that your members pay. That's because 2 and 3 years ago, various smart executives, who shall remain nameless in this moment, may have received good advice about being able to strategically implement incremental changes over time. So all coming exactly as we expected, and this is the first year that we're going to kind of really dive back into the plan financials and maybe look at potential changes, not necessarily recommending any, but this is because we've had a period of stability. This is a year where we'll focus just a little bit more on that in the at the committee level.
I'm going to have to pause you there, sorry, but the 15 minutes have run out, but we can extend by 10 minutes. Well, even for questions, we have to extend by 10. So
I'm done.
We need 2/3 of people to extend for another 10 minutes, so if you're okay with another 10 minutes, please raise your placards. Is there any opposition to this? I'm kind of tired of standing up. That carries 10 minutes. If you want to be added to the list, let me know. I'll write you down. Councilor McKenzie, go for it. Are we in questions? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Jump in.
So I did see in your document that for psychology and counseling, it was recently introduced. I do think, unfortunately, with the increase in awareness of mental health and the cuts from the province, students are going to be increasingly relying on their insurance to make sure that they are mentally well. I would love to sit on this committee, but I don't have the time. So I did just want to maybe state that I think there could be more coverage around this area, especially I think as it's been shown that students, quite frankly, need this. Currently, it's 80% per visit, which is I think quite good, but with a $600 annual max. So I go to counseling, and I'm fortunate enough to still be on my parents' plan through their workplace. In addition to this one, but $600, so the Alberta Psychologist Association recommends $200 an hour for each psychologist, so that will get you 3 sessions. I know, it's startling, and that's their recommended price, so I do think that is something that could be maybe looked into more, as I think students would very much utilize it if they felt like it was worth their time to go seek out a psychologist and utilize it that way. Currently, if you're only getting 3 sessions from a psychologist, it might not be even worth finding one. But otherwise, yeah, phenomenal work. Thank you for coming.
Excellent points. You can always increase coverage in that area. It will always be used. And every time we increase coverage, costs go up. So we're trying to balance, as I'm sure that I'm preaching to the converted, we're trying to balance the delivery of things that students need with keeping costs as low as possible. So while I'm certainly open to examining coverage increases, I think there's 2 other things we can do. We have an online psychology network where you can actually see a psychologist on your phone, tablet, etc., and they're hourly rates are lower because we've negotiated a network discount. So that's one way. You can get more sessions, stretching your health plan dollars, like I said earlier, so you can get more sessions at, I think it's 150 to 125 for the intro session. So using the network is one way to go. And then the other thing that I'm examining is actually there's a kind of coalescing around this new regulatory body where clinical cooperative clinical counselors will be recognized as eligible. So right now, if you're not a self-regulated college, if you don't have the right continuing education requirements, we can only cover psychologists and social workers. But if there is a new designation in Alberta that is recognized provincially, right, then I would advocate at the insurance level to have those covered as well, because it's just an extra access point. It's not saying that psychologists aren't good also, but if we could open up another avenue where a student could get more visits at a lower price point, then we could remove that barrier to access. So it's all coming together.
Thank you, Councillor Conrad.
Thank you, Kristen, for the... Oh, no.
Thank you for the presentation. Is there anything on this slide behind, here that you would like to unpack that we couldn't just get from reading it, just because you ran out of time?
Thank you. I'd like to remind you that you play a role as sort of a conduit both ways. So while I really appreciate hearing feedback, I also want to hear that feedback from your constituents. So if you can take this presentation, if you can take this message, and shop it around and bring forward any ideas that maybe students who aren't as engaged or who aren't here tonight can offer. That's really one of the best ways we've ever had of seeing new benefits and new approaches come to light. So I would respect and very much appreciate your involvement in that. And come and sit on my committee.
Thank you, Councillor Bowles.
Thank you for your presentation. I cannot talk from the perspective of from the engineering student's perspective, but I can tell from the perspective of an international student. This plan is amazing. I have used it like several times, but what I have seen is a lot of international students, when they first come here in Canada, their first instinct is to like save as much as money they can, and they tend to opt out. So I was wondering, it's just a piece of suggestion, not actually a question. So it would be great if you could reach out to the international students at the beginning of first year and actually tell them why do you actually need to have like a health insurance and how much it is actually gonna cost if you don't have one in case of emergency. I don't know whether this question goes to you or the SU Health and Dental Planning Committee, but I do believe it's important. Like in my first year, I literally saw one of my international friends who got sick one night and we had to take her to the hospital. There was ambulances and she opted out from this plan and she actually had to pay more than she would have had to if she had this plan. So yeah, this is just from me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Councillor Seat.
Thank you for your presentation. I just wanted to ask if the meetings were for the rest of this academic year, or was it like till the next of January?
It will be for the rest of this academic term.
Okay, so it'll be like that the rest of this half of the year?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is where most of the work gets done, just the nature of the health plan. We gather data in the first part of the year, and then from January to April is a lot of analysis and decision making. And I would imagine that you would be welcome to stay on the committee in future years, but the technical next work project is sort of January to April.
Thank you, Councillor Dixon.
Cool. I'm just going to talk because I think you can hear me. Okay, so my question is kind of centered around birth control. So I'm wondering how birth control is currently covered under the plan and if there's a consideration to kind of raise that coverage. Just because I know that some individuals still have to pay for it, even if they're covered under the plan, like for the IUD and stuff, unless I'm like mistaken. I have some questions, but that was the question I asked.
Okay, I'll talk fast. Oral contraceptives are covered 80%, and they actually represent 7 of the top 10 drugs in your health and dental plan. So there shouldn't be any. The only extra should be the 20% is the co-payment. IUDs are covered separately up to a maximum, I think, of $300 a year. And Mirena is actually one of the most popular IUDs, and we have some exceptional coverage for that. We did a campaign, let's see, 2 years ago to really raise awareness over that and point that out as one of the features and one of the coverages that we have. But yeah, if they are absolutely a critical and important part of the health plan, and if there's more that we can do, I'm certainly open to hearing it, but it's covered as per any other drug. There's no restriction on it other than that 20% copay.
Councilor Vargas-Alba?
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much. So there's currently a lot of treatments or drugs that are covered by the provincial government that affect at-risk communities. So that's treatments like free vaccines for HPV. It's free coverage of pre-exposure prophylactics and post-exposure prophylactics for drugs like AIDS and HIV. But there's a lot of fear within a lot of the communities that take a lot of these that these things are going to be defunded within the next few years. I don't know how based that is, and a lot of community health advocates have kind of assured me that this isn't a big fear. But I'm wondering, in a world where it is defunded, has student care at all considered how they would step up to cover a lot of things that are like very life-saving type like drugs and treatments?
So in the case of prescription medications, they're already covered at 80%. The plan currently follows the provincial formulary. We just use an external government, sort of decided by a panel of experts kind of formulary. If at any point you felt that the provincial formulary wasn't a good fit anymore, if it was being cut back and restricted in ways that you weren't comfortable with, you, the collective, you, the policyholder, then there are other options of formularies that we can use that are put out by nonprofits or that are put out by insurance companies themselves. I have a love-hate relationship with those. But there are other options. So at any point that you don't like the direction that the provincial formulary is going, we have ways to work around that. In terms of drugs or procedures that are covered under provincial health care, there are some restrictions because of the regulatory environment that the insurance industry operates under, in which we cannot cover something that is already covered. So one of the areas that we're looking into is under affirmation procedures, where a student or a member of the plan is not able to access all of the options that they want. Some of them are covered provincially, and we are somewhat restricted, and you know, we can't step on those toes. But some of them are actually areas where we can advocate for a more expansive definition of medical equipment, for example, or hormonal therapies that can be applied in new ways. So we're actually finding that the uptake with insurance companies is reasonable, and we're using our position as we do to advocate for a more, expansive and modern interpretation of what should be eligible. So to that extent, for communities that maybe feel a little underrepresented or underserved in a broader context, you have a greater weight as policyholder to be able to make those changes.
If we have run out of time. There's also no one on the speaking list, but if anybody wants to extend, can we?
It's exhausting. No, I'm just kidding.
Democracy at work. But we'll call the presentation there then if no one wants to move. So we'll thank our presenter. I'm sure we can facilitate it. All right, I hope you all are well. We'll move into executive committee reports.
I would like to make a motion to skip a board and committee reports and executive reports.
Second. Oh, sorry, my executive reports. That's in order. Hold on, wait a minute. That's in order. So your motion is to skip executive committee reports and board and committee reports.
Yes.
Clarified? Okay, that is in order. Thank you. And Vargas, I'll be seconded. Perfect. So this is essentially the standing orders. So we need 2/3, of course. So all in favor of skipping these two things, please raise your black raise.
Skipping these two things.
Is there any opposition to this?
There are no offensive that passes. Thank you. So we'll get the forum. So we'll now move to the forum, which is when our guests can ask counselors questions. So I will throw it over to any guests. If they have any questions, just raise your hands and I'll call on you.
Let's move it on.
You want to come up here, Counselor Kidley? If there's no questions from my guests, then we will continue. Into question period. So now is the moment where you can ask each other questions. So if you have questions to ask, let me know, raise your hand, and I will write it down, and we'll go from there. So, any questions?
We might actually end
there
up.
There are none. We can keep going. So we'll move on to board and committee business.
I thought we skipped that.
And there's no board committee business. Oh, there is board committee business. So we'll do these two things first over here.
Sorry, motion to put that behind the other policy things. And if we don't get to it, then I'm happy to table it. I just like voting on policy is more important right now than pointing them to policy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the best way to do this. It's your motion, so.
I know. Just heed it to the back of the list.
Okay, here's what we're going to assume happens. You decided to not do it, and then later you're going to move to do it again, in theory. Okay, perfect. Okay, Draper moves to approve second principles of Bill 7. Is there a seconder for this? Councilor Bose, thank you. Councilor Draper, would you like a minute for your introduction?
Yes, please. Okay, you have a minute. So, in spirit, this is functionally unchanged from what it was last time. However, I cleared up some wording to hopefully make it seem more straightforward for those reading it. I changed nominators in the second section to be supporters, what is actually people signing on a petition. Hopefully that clears up some confusion. Yeah, it's mostly just clarifying from what was said at the previous council meeting that this was brought to.
Thank you. If there's any debate, please raise your placard and I will write you down. Great. But if there is none, then we can vote. So let's just take the simple majority to pass. So all in favor of this second principles, please raise your placards. Is there any opposition? Are there any abstentions? All right, if none, that carries. Thank you. We now move back to the main agenda. So staff moves to appoint two members of Student Council to the Health and Dental Plan Committee. I'm not reading that aloud because there's a lot there. I've had a presentation. Is there a seconder for this motion? DC Larson, thank you. VP staff, would you like a minute to introduce?
Sure.
Okay, a minute, go for it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. While you all heard Kristen do her presentation, we all love Kristen in this house. I think what is up on the board and in the owner's papers is pretty apt to describe the committee and what it does, but long story short, you'll basically be able to provide some advice on what the discussion was in this room about what the future of the plan is, how the plans are currently serving students, and if there's changes we need to look at moving forward, as well as get some interesting statistics and information presented in a way that's very tangible and easy to understand. It shouldn't need a ton. It's pretty compact and it meets it very efficient with the time it has, and I also can't necessarily speak to the exact dates and times we'll be meeting, because I'll be set alongside Kristen and Robin and alongside the members of Students' Council that joined the committee as well. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask them, but a lot of people seemed interested during the presentation, so.
Thank you. If there are any nominations, please raise your placards. I'll call on y'all. I don't know who's handed it. Okay, Councilor Bose. Councilor Seed?
Yes, I accept.
Thank you. Are there any other nominations? Councilor Benicia?
I'd like to nominate Councilor
Kidd. Councilor Kidd?
I accept.
Are there any other nominations? Councilor Dillon?
I'd like to nominate Councilor Benicia.
I respectfully decline.
Okay. Any other Councillor Vargas-Alba?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Dixon.
Councillor Dixon.
Can I have a second to think about it?
Yes. Councillor Lowe.
I would
make a
nominate
Councillor Conrad.
I respectfully decline.
Councillor Dixon.
Sure.
Okay, just are there any other nominations? Okay, if there's no more, we'll do speeches. It is currently 8:56. We will adjourn in 4 minutes. I'm just throwing that out there unless someone has something to say about it. Councillor Draper.
Motion to extend by 20 minutes.
That's very optimistic. Is there a seconder for that? Councillor Hughes, thank you. This is the suspension of standing orders. It's non-debatable, non-amendable. Requires 2/3. All in favor of extending past 9 p.m. by 20 minutes? Please raise your placards if you're in favor. Or your hand. Is there any opposition to this? Carries, thank you. So we'll go into speeches. Councillor Dillon, you have a minute.
Hello, everyone. My leg is currently asleep, so that's what is on top of my mind right now. But thank you, everyone, for being here and staying the extra time. I just wanted to voice my interest and why I want to be part of this committee. So I spent a long part of my academic career here, which I know has only been 2 years, doing a lot of research and delving into sort of that healthcare side of things, and it's something that strongly interests me. I've been looking into, you know, I was talking about before, just neurodegeneration, how that affects students, especially on campus. I've also been doing a lot of Canadian Blood Services on campus, and looking into ways that we can make these help options, such as donating, more accessible to students. So this is obviously something that I care a lot about, and I've done a lot of work practicing this. I've also created a lot of awareness about health issues in regards to all individuals, as I'm an executive member and I'm chairing Edmonton World Health Organization. Once again, that kind of goes into both my interest and passion, and I know that...
Thank you, Councillor Dillon.
Thank you.
Okay, Councillor C, you have a minute.
Hello, everyone. This sounds like a wonderful committee to be a part of. I think it's a great opportunity to advocate for students, and I've been on policy committee for this past year, so I'll just definitely be using what I've learned there for the policy and the direction of this committee. If I'm elected, I'll do my best to make sure the policy and the directions of this most used service continues to serve students' health and dental and pharmaceutical needs. And yeah, I think it's super sad that some international students opt out of it without knowing that this is actually something that could cost save them a lot of money. I hope you vote for me.
Thank you. We'll go to Councillor Kidd for a minute.
All right, so thanks you all for staying so I can hopefully get put on this committee. I'm really passionate about these things. I lived in Lister for 2 years and I saw how residents would opt out of these plans and then desperately end up needing the coverage and paying more for things. I know firsthand the information gap that happens, especially when you are in residence and you just don't understand quite yet, especially when you first move to university and you're trying to like comprehend basically how life works here. The other thing is my mom used to be a pharmaceutical lobbyist, but like a good kind, I promise, not the bad kind. It's very different in Canada. So I know a lot actually about how drugs get funded and listed through A, insurance, and B, also the government. So I feel like I'm actually pretty qualified to sit on this committee. Beyond that, yay.
Drugs.
Thank you. We'll go to Councillor Dixon for a minute.
I'm gonna withdraw my acceptance.
For sure. So that ends our speeches. There's 3 people who were nominated. I need you all to take paper when you have it, and please write down your ranking. So these are your 4 candidates.
2.
Yeah, so there's 2 people on the committee, and there's 3 candidates, and you can also vote for them to be above. So I ask that you try and do this only with a dull roar, because I'm going to take attendance while we do this, because it is 9 p.m.
So just bear with me.
Round paper.
Maybe Councilor McKenzie can do something.
Do you have paper?
But you guys give me out of my hat.
I'll do the
paper. I gave it to you.
Paper.
No, wait.
But they don't get the
online.
Okay, President Bastard.
Present?
Thank you. Yeah, so while we're doing the voting process, we're going to do attendance because it's 9 p.m. When you're done, you can just bring your sheets up and I'll throw them in a pile and I'll count them after the meeting. So the pile is right here. D.P. Agarwal.
Here.
D.P. Brown.
Here.
D.P. Stats.
Here.
D.P. Barson.
Here.
Governor Lee.
Here.
Councilor McKenzie.
Yeah.
Councilor Conrad.
Hey.
Councilor Vargadal.
Help yeah.
Councilor Beasley. Councilor Chen. Councilor Dixon.
Yeah.
Councilor Draper.
Oh, let's count the last one.
Councilor Isaac. Councilor Esmail.
Here.
Councilor Marinakis.
Here.
Councilor Kidd.
Yes.
Councilor C. Councilor C.
Here.
Councillor Bowes.
Here.
Councillor McKinney. Councillor Harris.
Here.
Councillor Sunday. Councillor Nguyen. Councillor Blondin.
Here.
Councillor Hadouche.
Yeah.
Councillor Benicia.
Yeah.
Councillor Dillon.
Here.
Councillor Capera. Councillor Syed.
Here.
Okay, so please, over the course of the rest of the evening, please bring your votes. And when I leave tonight, that will be the cutoff. I will send an email to you all later this evening with the tally votes. Otherwise, we are going to continue on with our agenda. So the next motion is Kidd/Larson move to approve the second principles of the student poverty policy. Councillor Kidd, would you like a minute to introduce?
Yeah, could you just give me like 5 minutes?
Yes.
I'm on it, never mind, I'm on it.
Okay, go for it.
Oh, all right. Hello, everyone. So this is the second principles of the student poverty policy. I'm going to try very hard not to cry if we talk about this because I'm just so passionate about student poverty. So what we've really worked on with the resolutions and just like second principles is working to make sure that SU is doing more research into how can we better meet these students' needs, how can we better understand what their lives are like, how can we better know them so that we can work to further address the issues they face. I've said it before, I just don't think there's enough research on these students, even though we are leading this research. So it's important to me that we continue to do more and more research. Can you guys hear me at all?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. If there is debate, please raise your placards and I will write down your name. Otherwise, if there's nothing, we'll vote. So I'll give you a second. Any debate on this? VP Agarwal, 4 minutes.
Not really a debate, but I just wanted to say I'm very pleased with the work that Katie and VP Larson, or Councillor Kidd, sorry, have been putting into this. It's really, a monumental policy from the U of A, but also across the province. Thank you very much for the great work.
Thank you. Is there any other debate on this motion? If there is none, then we can vote. So this is, again, a simple majority to pass. All in favor of this motion, please raise your hand. /pass. Is there any opposition? Are there any abstentions? Then that passes. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on. Brown/Kidd move to approve the second principles of the tuition policy. BP Brown, do you want a minute?
Yes,
please. Okay, go for it.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. So just
change resolutions, updating. Honestly, there wasn't a ton to change as to like sort of the intent of the resolutions. There were a couple of things that had been either done or just needed some more clarification. So we removed one point, which was resolution 2A, if I'm not mistaken, because that was done. That was Bill 19. So that was completed. So we rearranged a couple of things. We also sort of added point 4, sort of reaffirms the notion that a publicly funded post-secondary institution should be a publicly funded post-secondary institution. Which is obviously concerning given the current political situation, as well just sort of reaffirming things that we strongly oppose, and that are those are things that that we all hold our representatives on the Board of Governors and myself when lobbying to government on. So that's presented.
Perfect timing. Thank you, Eugene Brown. Is there any debate on this motion? There is none, and we can vote. So again, as a majority. All in favor of the motion? Is there any opposition? Are there any abstentions? None. That carries. Thank you. To continue, I might owe Councillor Draper an apology. I might get it done by
good estimation skills.
Councillor C moves to approve one member of Students' Council to the Audit Committee.
Stay.
Okay, I'll stay.
Is there a seconder for this motion? Councillor Bose, thank you. Councillor C, would you like a minute? Councillor C?
So Mohammed moved to Calgary, so we need another person to be an audit. So, yeah.
Thank you. Are there any nominations for this position? Councillor C?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Harris. Yes, Harris.
Do you accept, sorry?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other nominations for this position? There are none. Then the position goes to Councillor Harris.
According to a parliamentary inquiry?
Yes.
I'm just double checking that my motion from the late ads made it onto the
main agenda. It did. So we're just going through board and committee business, and then when you get to general board. You know how it goes, Chief. Okay, Councillor Vargas Alba moves to appoint one member of Students' Council, the Policy Committee. Is there a seconder for this? Councillor Hadouche, thank you. Councillor Vargas Alba, would you like a minute?
Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
So, as we can see on policy, policy meets every second Tuesday, so starting next Tuesday at 5, as you know this. We're the funnest committee you will ever be on. And that's not only because of me, it's also because of all the amazing people on it. If everyone can raise their hand, so everyone knows not to double nominate people, just so we know who's on it generally. Yeah, okay, doesn't matter. We're working on policies right now, don't worry about it, it's fine. We're working on policies around volunteerism, unionism, open educational resources, freedom of expression, students with attendance, experiential learning, policy around the Young Senate campus, around climate action, and kind of finishing up a policy around quality instruction. There's a few more. If any of these sound interesting to you, come learn about policy, come have a good time. Can't promise we have like cake or anything, but I brought cupcakes to the last meeting of the fall meeting, so that was fun. Two hoots of a policy meeting.
All right, thank you, Ooh. Councillor Vargas Alba. Are there any nominations? I know Councillor Bowles, you had your hand up. Councillor Draper?
I would like to accept.
All right, thank you. I'm just writing that down. Councillor Kidd?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Dillon.
Accept. Okay, Councillor Hadouche?
I would like to nominate Councillor Dixon.
Councillor Dixon?
Yes.
Okay, get more paper out right now. So, any other nominations? There are no more Councillor Bose? Councillor Conrad?
Like, I'm sorry, I have to resurrect the faculty association.
Standard. Any other nominations? Is that a threat? With that, we'll move into speeches. So before you vote, please hear out the candidates. I'm allowing you to say. No more, of course, no more nominations. Okay, Councillor Draper, you have 1 minute.
Well, Councillor Vargas Alba has so confidently asserted this is the funnest committee on council. As the chair of bylaw, I've oftentimes said that bylaw is the most fun as well as the most amount of hoots. I would like to see firsthand how wrong Councillor Vargas is and help him to make it as fun as it possibly can be. Also, open educational resources are like my favorite thing by far, forever and above, and that's a policy they're working on right now, and I would love to work on that so, so much. Also, although I'm not personally from Augustana, my brother spent a few years on the ASA when he went there, so I have some valuable input from that end, from his time there, as well as through the connections at the ASA that I have from him. And I think that my knowledge from bylaw, and as well as my passion, can be a great thing for the committee, and I can help it make it as many hoots as possible so that it's better for everybody. Even though I think it is fun, I just, bylaw is a special place in everybody's heart, not just mine.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Draper. Councillor Dillon, you have 1 minute.
Hi, everyone, again. You know, I sit here every other Tuesday, and I sit beside Katie most of the time, and I just want to feel how happy she feels when she gets a policy passed. I want the same tears to roll down my face. And if you want to give me that experience of overwhelming joy, if you want to see me cry for maybe once in my life, then you should vote for me, because, that is why. Thank you.
Thank you. And then Councillor Dixon, you have 1 minute.
Okay, cool. So, hello everyone. This was the number one committee I wanted to get on when I joined council, and originally I didn't get to go on this committee. So I really like the opportunity to go ahead and be on this committee because it affects a lot of the issues that I'm very interested in very directly, and every single week I look at policy committee stuff and I'm like, damn, I wish I was there. And I've gone out to two meetings because they were the ones that I could make, but I definitely want to make time to make this committee a priority of mine if I'm nominated to it. I know, for example, they have they're working on the climate change policy, or at least it's a discussion, and that's something I'm very knowledgeable on and would love to contribute to, as well as all of their other policies. I've been reading along with what they're doing and doing the same research with it, so I would love to have an impact there and represent not just art students, but all students with the knowledge that I have on this committee. So thanks.
Great. Thank you. So this is a list of people you can vote for: Draper, Dillon, Dable, Dixon, and none of the above. You're ranking them, but we're only picking one candidate this time. So I don't know if that changes things, but you're picking one, and then just rank them for me so I can do it.
I don't like that.
What?
Can we add seats to policy committee?
That's
a tough choice.
Talk to your bylaw chair.
Hey,
what's red tape?
That's a conflict of interest.
Are we doing one or two?
So you're
just write something down.
You're ranking these people, but we're only picking one ultimately. Yep. So again, please put it just on the front area there. Yeah, right there. Everyone sees it. Thank you. 10% battery left. So don't feel rushed and do it right now. Also, we're handing it in right now because we have to keep going. So just write it down, and before you leave, just make sure you give it to me. Just put it on the front desk area somewhere. But if we can all keep going, we still have another motion to get through, and then a closed session if you all want.
Do we have to make sure we inform?
We should. I'll triple check in a moment, but. He's give it to a dog war, Final Radigar. That means time, please. Or y'all, please.
So I'm asking a question about procedure because I realized I have an actually genuine important report to make and I didn't get the opportunity to, but it's very time sensitive and I need it for tonight. So how can I potentially add a section for me to just make one statement?
Is it? It's not closed? It's an open?
It's not closed, no.
Okay.
It could be, it doesn't really matter.
I think that we will, I would recommend that as many standing orders so that you can have a, I don't know, a, like, or you can go in committee of the whole if you wanted to. That
works
also.
At the end of the meeting, can I make a motion to just like discuss something and then?
Just go into committee of the whole.
When? Right now?
After the last, well, whatever you want, but that's the way I recommend you to change. Okay, perfect. So we're going to move on to general orders. Bantnagar moves pursuant to Section 311 of Bylaw 6100 to call a referendum on the Gateway DFU question as approved in Motion 2019-15/7E, and to direct the Speaker to inform the CRO of Students' Council authorization of this referendum within 24 hours of the conclusion of this meeting. I just read this as giving me more work to do. That's fine. Did I have a seconder for this? VP Agarwal, thank you. And then President Bantnagar, would you like it? Pardon?
His hand was needed
So that, you don't have, okay, anyway.
I don't even like
this. VP Agarwal, you won't say anything anyway. Okay, President Bantnagar, would you like a minute to introduce? Okay, go for it.
So hello folks, this is just me covering literally every single bylaw base that I could potentially cover to ensure that our campus media has a shot at revitalizing their finances. So I didn't necessarily have to make this motion, but essentially what I'm doing is just being like, they can for sure do this referendum without getting the 4,000 petition signatures. So making it more accessible for them, because that was the bylaw changes that we had made in the last two meetings. So that's effectively what this is. It's not a typical motion that's made, but I really am just trying to cover all the bases that could potentially be refuted. But really out here trying to support campus media folks. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to take them. But otherwise, yeah.
Great. Thank you. Is there any debate on this motion? There is none, and you can vote on it. Again, it's just a simple majority to pass. So all in favor of this, please raise your hand or your placard. Thank you. Any opposition? Any abstentions? There are none, that carries. I now have a deadline of tomorrow. I'll get it done. Thank you, President Bantnagar.
I'd like to make a motion to move it to committee of the whole.
That's an order. Is there a seconder? Councilor Draper, thank you. All in favor? Any opposition? Any abstentions? Thank you, that carries. I'll pass it to you. I'll just note that we only have 2 minutes until 9:20. Is that enough time, or do you want more?
I think it'll be enough. I don't know.
Pardon?
I think it'll be enough.
Okay, go for it.
Hello, folks. So I'm sorry that I didn't realize this earlier, but as you might know, tomorrow is the start of the Bell, #Bell Let's Talk Day. And so I've really been working with external media to try to figure out a way to get student mental health as like a media priority. It tends to just be mental health as a whole, industry mental health, but how can we get post-secondary students in front of a lit-ass camera? So I secured us a spot with Alberta Primetime tomorrow at 1:45, but I'm looking for a student, just one student who has, who I guess is open enough to discuss their identity and regarding how it's impacted their mental health, especially in context of the upcoming provincial budget and sort of how that has made them feel. But they have like been very open and really awesome to work with, and they're even gonna come to campus, which is not something typical, but Alberta Primetime is like one of the number one watched Alberta shows. So if you're interested, send me a message. It's literally tomorrow at 2 p.m. They confirmed only today. The exact time is between like 1:45 to 2:15-ish. They're gonna film on campus, probably in my in the office 2900 lounge. But it can be a counselor, a student that you know that's interested. But it is asking a lot, because a student is gonna have to be very vulnerable on camera about their experiences with mental wellness and the impact of the budget. But also like this will be amazing, because right, student mental health is gonna be first and foremost a priority of the Bell Let's Talk campaign for tomorrow. So that's pretty exciting. So just shoot me a message literally tonight or tomorrow morning, and I'll send the Alberta Primetime contact your name. So I'll be there to help watch you and guide you the thing, but I'm not gonna be the one on the camera, because I think it'd be better if it was like a student who genuinely has been impacted by this in ways different than myself.
Okay, thank you. Can you move back to committee of the difference? Yes, that's in order. That means how to commute the whole story. Councilor Bates for seconds, thank you. All in favor? Please be all in favor. Any opposition? Any abstentions? Perfect, thank you. We're back in committee of the whole. Is there anything for our closed session today?
Yes.
Chris? Okay, so I need someone to maybe have a motion
no,
to...
No, there's no motion, Mr. Speaker.
No, to extend the meeting,
okay,
sir.
Thank God.
So we need to extend the meeting, though, so is anybody willing to motion to extend that meeting? VP staff.
Yes.
For how long, sorry?
I would say this would take... I'll do 15 minutes.
15 minutes, all right. Is there a seconder? Governor Lee, thank you. So this requires two-thirds. All in favor, please raise your placards or your hands. Please vote. Also, raise everything nice and high so I can actually see. I feel like I have not been scolding you enough for not raising them high enough. Is there any opposition? Is there any abstentions? That carries, thank you. We're taking to 9:35. We're going into camera, so if you're not a member of council, you can leave.
I try my best to estimate it good. Sorry, y'all.